frenzy mode whenever a budget is coming around. It's really, really interesting. But is there a danger of every phone in sounding the same? Yesterday, it was the turn of pensioners to say, oh, not me, Gov. Although, actually, a rather uplifting amount of people got in touch to say, no, I should actually probably not be getting as much as I get. And today, it's people in big houses, or, I suppose, if you're in the southeast, expensive houses. Form an orderly queue and tell me why you shouldn't be paying a little bit more tax by dint of owning a massive gaff.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, senior US officials are to meet with Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi later as part of efforts to end the war in Ukraine. Renewed Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, overnight has reportedly killed at least six people. Sir Keir Starmer will also host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies later as part of efforts to end Russia's invasion. Former Russian diplomat Boris Bondev says the Kremlin is content to let Ukraine's leader do the talking.
I think Moscow is quite satisfied watching this from distance, waiting for something to be presented to it. So Moscow would make the final choice, what to agree on, what not. It puts Putin again and again in a position of strength.
The government's confirmed it's backing Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving the M25. Ministers have backed the expansion and insist it'll comply with legal, environmental and climate obligations. The £49 billion project should be operational by 2035. City AM's editor Christian May is following developments for LBC.
It is going to be another row, another twist in this. A lot of the airline groups don't like the way the Heathrow operators run their airport and think that if they are in charge of building its very expensive extension, it will lead inevitably to putting up prices for airlines and passengers. Heathrow would dispute that. We are going to hear a little later, I believe, from Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, who's going to set out a bit more detail about this.
Pre-packaged milkshakes and lattes are expected to be hit by the sugar tax in an announcement ahead of tomorrow's budget. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is expected to tell the Commons later that the government will end the exemption for milk-based drinks. The move would not include those made in cafes and restaurants. And you can hear the budget live and in full here tomorrow on LBC. Nigel Farage says he's never directly racially abused anyone in response to claims he was racist towards pupils while at school. He says there are hugely political elements to the claims from nearly 50 years ago. Reform UK says the allegations are entirely without foundation. And Ofcom has urged technology companies to step up their efforts to tackle the online abuse towards women and girls. The communications regulator has published new guidance. It includes measures such as prompts that'll ask users to reconsider before posting harmful content. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 8 at 95.26. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest. Another mild day. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do people ever tell you something and you just think that can't be right? Intelligent people, sensible people, informed people, they'll tell you something and you'll just go, that just can't be right. Somebody told me yesterday that council tax bans are calculated according to the value of your home, according to an assessment carried out in 1991. 1991. I was going to do that as a hook and tease. I was going to say to you, do you want to have a guess at when your house's value was assessed for council tax banding purposes. But then I thought, no, because no one will guess that correctly. The only people who will get that right are the people who know. Nobody would think it was 1991. What's 25 plus 19? 44 years ago. No, that can't be right. 34 years. Oh, always. When will I learn? Never do maths on the radio. 1991. 25 plus 9. 34 years ago. That's insane. And then I stopped to think, is it actually insane? Because if you were to plot a graph of house prices, wouldn't it be fairly steady? Wouldn't the gradient be fairly level? And the bits when it tapers off or goes flat, they'd all go flat. Do you see what I mean? So in fact, surely everybody's house's value in percentage terms has changed by roughly the same amount. Does that sound bonkers? I've got a friend who lives in Stoke and Church, and he is the only person I know whose flat has not changed in value at all in all the years that he's owned it. I don't know whether he overpaid or whether something is unique to that particular environ. But apart from him, I always remember being at a Christmas party years ago. I told you about this at the time. And one of my newish neighbours was wanging on about how much all our houses had gone up in value. And the neighbour who I then became very good friends with, I first sort of came to my attention by pointing out that it was still only worth one house. So unless you were prepared to move somewhere where the houses cost considerably less than where you lived now, then the value, the nominal value of your house was largely irrelevant in the context of where you lived. Do you see what I mean? It was a really clever observation. Even if you were to move somewhere that was considerably less than where you live now, that would have gone up by the same percentage amount. So the only time you really take advantage of house prices is when you downsize considerably and end up having a lot more money left over to spend on other stuff than you would have done had you stayed in your original house. But every house is worth one house. Would you like to hear Sir Martin of Lewis? Has Martin been knighted yet? Is anyone keeping an eye on this? We should do that. Gong Watch. Should we introduce Gong Watch for Martin? Why does Martin Lewis not have a knighthood? Has anyone done more for the general public in this country than Martin Lewis? I listen, full disclosure, I declare an interest. He's a pal of mine, we were on the same. Defeated. University Challenge Team, celebrity, they don't call it celebrity, you can see why if I was on it, but the same sort of grown-up University Challenge Team. But even if I didn't know him personally, I'd be the president of his fan club. Lad's a genius. Everything he touches is just right. He's probably made you more money than Rachel Reeves ever has in the context of following his advice. But he's pretty good on this, as he is good on everything. It's not just me who thinks it's bonkers.
And when I say drive by, I'm literally talking a couple of estate agents in a car often with a clipboard in second gear going band C, band D, band E. And that is still in place today. So no surprise, up to 400,000 homes are in the wrong band.
400,000 homes are in the wrong band. Martin Lewis, they're completely exploding my tentative theory that this wasn't quite as bonkers as it originally sounded. What if you put a swimming pool in the basement in the ensuing 34 years? What if you've built an extension that's bigger than the original house? What if you've put one of those super basements in that used to be all the rage about 5 or 10 years ago? Everywhere you went in parts of London, there'd be like diggers. Do you remember the myth about how if you dug a basement under your house, it was impossible to get it out again? So parts of Mayfair were full of basements that actually had full JCBs interred beneath the bottom of the ground floor. Apparently an urban myth, but I digress. How are they going to do it if they bring this thing in tomorrow? They're going to do it, presumably, according to a system that is 34 years old and contains at least, well, not far shy of 500,000 mistakes. If you find yourself in band G or band H, then you are potentially going to get hit, only if it's worth over a certain amount. So if you're band G or band H in Cleethorpes, and I'm only picking Cleethorpes because that's where Ron lives, you're unlikely to qualify for the mansion tax. But if you're in... do you see what I mean? I mean, it's going to be an absolute nightmare to simply police it to do the logistics of it. In fact, one front page today says mansion tax will cause Labour a world of trouble in budget, warns top economist. And it's a proper top economist. It's the former head of the Institute of Fiscal Studies. It's not one of the weirdos they used to wheel out and describe as a top economist when they were struggling to find anybody to tell you that Brexit was going to be good for our economy. About 100,000 households living in homes worth more than 2 million, will face an extra bill of £4,500. Accountants have cast doubt on whether the move will ever raise the 400 million quid that the Chancellor is hoping for. Paul Johnson says the council tax system needs a complete overhaul. A majority of Britons fear that the cost of living crisis may never end. That's a slightly different story, but it's on the same front page. And I mean, can you really, if you're living in a £2 million house or plus, can you really object to finding £4,500 a year to pay towards the general good, to pay towards the general population? And that's really the phone-in that I want to have today. Yesterday's was really interesting. Thanks to you, not me. I didn't do anything very special or intelligent, but we went off on a bit of an odd tangent because the first caller was very, very, very much in favour of abolishing the state pension for people who've got a few quid, means testing it at root. But that wasn't really the phone-in that I wanted to have. I wanted to have a slightly broader, more nuanced conversation about whether or not we do need to bite the bullet of being over-generous to some old-age pensioners in this country. And there was a broad consensus that we do. Although, obviously, the not-well-off pensioners had absolutely nothing to fear from those proposals. Today, the simple idea that anybody living in a home worth more than £2 million will face an extra bill of £4,500 on average, so I guess it will be tapered. The more it is that your house is worth, the more you may have to pay. I can't quite see, unless we are disputing the basic premise of necessity. All of these phone-ins, all of these conversations, all of this pre-budget pontification hinges upon the presumption that everybody agrees we've got to raise some more money, and you're not going to be able to raise it, as that Richard Tice chap seems to think, by going after children who wear ear defenders in class because of their autism or their special educational needs. You are not going to be able to raise this money by stopping people on Motability putting their allowances towards a fancy car. That, more on that later, because it looks like that's going to be outlawed anyway. You are not going to be able to plug the fiscal holes in our country, in our economy, by going after people who were already at the bottom of the economic pile by dint of being unemployed or on welfare or both. So where are you going to get the money from? The left-wing populist steps forward at this point and starts shouting wealth tax, which is not an answer to the question that is being asked. There is room for it. But what is a mansion tax if not a wealth tax? Problems I can see immediately. My home may be worth more than £2 million, but actually most of that is a mortgage. So is that fair? Answer yes, because nobody made you buy a house that you need to take out a massive mortgage on. By definition, if you are in that sort of market property-wise, then you are on the hook for this tax, and so you should be. 03456060973. Number two, what if you're in one of these 500,000 houses, Martin Lewis, or 400,000 houses, Martin Lewis has identified as being in the wrong council tax band, and that leads you to being on the hook for this? So the council are telling you your house is worth £2.5 million, and the bloke from Foxton's is telling you it's worth £1.5 million. Or other estate agents are, of course, available. So problem number one, mortgages. Problem number two, valuations. Driving around in second gear, a couple of estate agents in a full Fiesta pointing at a house and just plucking a band out of the ether. What if you're on one of those roads where all the houses are different, where it's not homogenous? Anyway, these are potential quibbles, which we are aware of and keen to hear more of, but not, I don't think, minded at the moment to make the central point of this expected policy announcement. I also wonder whether today is the day to dig into what Paul Johnson has said and look at the difficulties of the detail, the difficulties of delivering it, because I think that I find myself leaning more today towards the moral of the story. Towards the moral of the story. And the moral of the story here is we have to identify people who can both afford and be compelled to pay a bit more tax. I'm going to say that again because it seems to me to cut to the very heart of absolutely everything that we converse about in these moments. We have to identify the people at the moment, unless you honestly think that you can solve a 20 or a 30 billion pound black hole by taking ear defenders away from autistic children. We have to agree that there is a part of society who are both capable of paying more tax and can be compelled to pay more tax. Internationally, mobile billionaires are not capable of being compelled to pay more tax in this country because they really can move. No matter how much exaggeration there is about exoduses, what's the plural of exodus? Is it exodi? But anyway, no matter how much exaggeration and embellishment there may be, if you exist to count your money, if that is your purpose on this earth, to make as much money as you can and to sit there counting it until you shuffle off this mortal coil, then you will happily live in, well, you'll live anywhere that you could, where you can keep more of your money. I was reading about a billionaire yesterday who apparently was worth £33 billion at the last time of asking, and he's going to move to Dubai because he's worried about tax in this country. And I thought, mate, what is the point of being alive if you've got £33 billion in the bank and you're going to uproot your life and your family because you might have a bit less than that next year than you would have if you lived somewhere else? At what point do you sit down, look yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, I'm going to make my decisions based on what I like and what I love. And then the reflection looks back at you and says, you only like and love money, boss. You don't like and love anyone else. You don't like and love the people that you spend time with in the country where you live. You don't like and love the country where you live. You don't like and love the traditions of the country where you've made your home. You don't like and love the population of the country where you've made your home. You don't like and love the values of the country where you've made your home. The only thing you like and love is money. So off you go. Seriously, hop on your private jet and fly to Dubai, where you can live under Sharia law while reading on the Daily Mail website about how awful it would be to live under Sharia law. Or racist lies on Twitter about Sadiq Khan trying to win. No, I tell a lie. That's Shakira law, of course. So we have to somehow, however unjust it may feel, there is a cohort of people that we have to exclude from this conversation because of the two C's. You'd be tempted to chalk it up as the three C's, but this is a family program. The two C's, people who are capable and can be compelled to pay more tax. In this case, an average of £4,500 a year, on average, for people whose homes are worth more than £2 million. For the avoidance of doubt, I will almost certainly be on the hook for this. I will almost certainly be on the hook for this. To me, an entirely reasonable regulation or requirement for people who live in the most expensive properties in the country. The problem with living in the southeast is that, you know, there are streets. My old house would have, I don't know that my old house would have quite qualified for this, but if I'd lived in a slightly smarter part of London, then my very, well, not very, I don't want to say very ordinary, but my unremarkable Victorian terrace would have been worth more than £2 million. But that means my salary was up to the job of paying for my unremarkable Victorian terrace, and location, location, location being the mantra of our age. We chose to live in an area that we could afford. We chose to live pretty much at the extent of what we could afford, like most people do. And I can't quite see how, if you accept the two C's, you are capable of paying a little bit more tax and you can be compelled to do so, which horribly does exclude people who don't love anything except money. They will not stay in a country where they're going to be worth £31 billion next year instead of £31.5 billion or £31.25 billion or £31.1 billion. Think about the interest on that sort of assets, and tax is going to... Anyway, I digress. If you can pay it and you can be compelled to pay it, who's going to tell me? Who's going to tell me that this is unfair? You are allowed to tell me that it's fair, but obviously your position is massively strengthened if you are going to be on the hook for it yourself. I refuse to accept. Look, I haven't got $4,500 in my pocket, okay? But I refuse to accept that if you're living in a house worth more than £2 million, you can't find £4,500 a year, or you can't sign up quite happily to a scheme that says when this house next goes on the market, there will be a charge on it. So if it goes on the market in 10 years' time, you've got over £2 million coming across the counter, £45,000 goes to the Treasury out of over £2 million. I don't accept it. Whether it's fair or not is for you to tell me. Whether the Watford gap is pertinent here is for you to tell me. Does it discriminate against people in the southeast, or does it simply target the higher earners? If you're on a massive salary and you don't live in a house worth more than £2 million, you're probably laughing all the way to the bottle bank. But that's not how politics or economics works. It is essentially utilitarian, for the greater good. And sometimes that means a small number of people shoulder a bigger burden by dint of their personal circumstances in order to improve the existences of the overall population. So here we are. Come at it from whatever angle you want, but if you are digging into the detail as a reason why it won't work, you may leave me behind. I may not be able to keep up with you, but that's fine. All human life is here. The fundamental moral principle at this point in the United Kingdom's economic history, if your house is worth more than £2 million a year, you're going to pay a few grand extra in tax for the privilege of staying in it. Is that good? Is that bad? And how might you respond to it? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. It's 20 past 10.
LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
Really simple things that a small business can do today is educating employees. It's imperative that we think about cybersecurity not just as a tech thing, but it's really a human thing. It's all about the human behind the computer and training your team to really be aware.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business, LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
Shall we have a few rules today? Are you in the mood for some rules? That's me cracking my whip. If you are going to argue that this tax is unfair, that people... Won't somebody think of the people living in homes worth more than £2 million? Crack open the tiny violins and start the concerto. Then you have to tell me who they should go after instead, that they're not already going after, if you see what I mean. If they're not going to put up income tax, spoiler alert, I think they should, then where else are they going to raise the money? Answer, assets. What's the biggest asset most of us have and will ever have? Answer, home. So where do you get the money from? If you accept the necessity of raising it and you accept the necessity of identifying people who can pay and can be compelled to pay, then where else would you go? And yes, it will affect me. Tracy's in Reading. Tracy, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Just want to say, be nice to me.
No,
I'm very nervous.
I can't make any promises at all. And also, how do I know that you're nervous? You might just be saying that to defang me, to make me retract my claws.
Seriously, if you could feel my heart now, it is pounding out of my chest.
Okay, well, I'll be very gentle.
Thanks. I don't believe you, but anyway. So, I don't really have any answers, but I am a bit cross about the the tax on houses that might be over 2 million. I mean, is it definitely going to be over 2 million? Yeah. Do we know that yet?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as much as we know anything. Do you know, if a Chancellor had to resign just a few decades ago, if any details got leaked to the media before the actual budget day, by the time Rachel Reeves stands up tomorrow, they're going to have released the full details twice, retracted them, and then released the new version again. But anyway, we digress. It looks almost certain that 2 million quid will be the threshold.
Okay, which in some areas is actually not that expensive. So you might have a house somewhere worth 2 million up north. The same house would be worth, say, 1 million. So that, and you might work for a company that pay, you know, you might work for a company that pay the same wherever you live. So there's that. And then also,
that
I know
it doesn't really work, because if you're going to buy the best house you can afford wherever you are. So if you're living in the north parts of the north, no, not everybody, but almost everybody buys the best house they can afford. Same with most of their purchases. You buy the best thing you can afford. And therefore, if you're living in the northeast, you're going to have a way, way, way bigger house for your 2 million quid than you are if you're living in Putney.
Well, what about this? And what if you can't afford to move, but all you've done all your whole life is you've extended and renovated,
Well, how come you can't afford to move?
Because, so my husband is a plumber, my son's an electrician, so we do our own work, and we work really hard, and...
Is your house worth over £2 million?
No, well, not at the moment.
Okay.
But
it might be one day. If they carry, if you carry on building these extensions, it might be one day.
But it's lovely, but my sons as well, my husband at the moment is just building a little extension on my son's one-bedroom house to give him 2 bedrooms because they can't afford to move. But the other thing I wanted to say was about, I know this is controversial, but poll tax in the day.
Yeah.
I had lots of friends that their children went to court because they couldn't afford it. But that is fair, because you might have a £2 million house with one person in it, and you might have a 1 million, you know, 999,000 with 6 people living in it.
Yeah.
But they're all having the same, you know, they're not taking, okay, they're rubbish.
This isn't really working, is it?
What's not working? This, on the radio?
You're casting around a lot. I mean, we're now talking about the poll tax, which hasn't really existed since the 1980s.
No, I know, but it wasn't
tell me
fair,
why.
Wasn't
tell,
it?
Tell me why it would not be fair for someone who can afford to live in a £2.5 million house to pay £4.5 grand a year in tax, because they can and they can be compelled to do so.
Okay, so what if you are a couple that have got a £2 million house? You have a child pass away, and your child inherits the house, but they are just, you know, whatever.
And then you put a charge on. Then you put a charge on it, so no one takes any money at all until the house is sold.
I think it's unfair on people that do work hard, have nice houses.
Newsflash. Most people who work hard do not live in houses worth more than £2 million. The percentage of people living in houses worth that kind of money is infinitesimal. And some of them don't work at all. But there are millions of people in this country who work every hour God sends, who could not dream of ever living in a house worth that much.
I know that, but I do think there needs to be a different way. I honestly don't think that doing that is, it's going to ruin everything. It's going to make house prices won't move because people won't move.
That's good, isn't it? That makes everything more affordable.
You think so?
I don't know. I mean, usually the reason why young people can't get on the property ladder is because everything's too expensive.
It is, and in this area, I mean, my poor son and his girlfriend, their little tiny one-bed house.
If I forced you to give me in a sentence the reason why you don't like this, what would you say? Because I, at the moment, honestly,
I don't like the fact that it might affect people that are living in a house that they've had their whole lives.
Well, I've got one of those. I've got one of those. And I do honestly think that the comeback to that is the charge. So here you go. Fiona is exactly the person of whom you speak. We bought our house in 1976 for £30,000. It's now worth £1.5 million. So you wouldn't actually be affected, but let's pretend it's worth £2.5 million. However, I'm a pensioner. I don't have a big pension. The cost of downsizing is prohibitive. It's not, of course, but I mean, I take your point. Unless you've remortgaged to the point where you'd have to give the majority of that £1.5 million back to the bank. I live in Essex on the Central Line. I can't afford to pay what sounds like a huge amount of tax. When I die, my kids will have a huge inheritance tax on the house. Not if you're not in it anymore. And I don't really see how the charge of £4,500 a year for all the years that you're in a really expensive house but you can't afford to pay can be argued with. Let's be even kinder. Let's take the charge off before inheritance tax is applied. And I mean, can't afford to downsize. Don't want to downsize, but can't afford to downsize. But listen, Tracy speaks for a lot of people, as indeed does Fiona, neither of whom are actually affected by it. That's the beauty of right-wing approaches to tax, is that you just persuade people that they could be on the hook for this one day, and therefore they should oppose it. Those of us who are on the hook for it, who support it, i.e. me, are arguably the quietest voices in the country. Because nobody's going to really want to quote us in the Daily Mail saying, yeah, listen, you should see my house. It's huge. Of course I should pay a bit more money. Instead, you say, you should see my house. It's huge, but I can't really afford it. And therefore, I shouldn't pay a bit more money, and nor should anybody. Instead, we should get the money for... Actually, before you go, Tracy, I did make it clear. You need to tell me where we should be getting the money from instead.
I did tell you that I wasn't sure.
Well, yeah, I did tell you that you have to.
I think if I knew, I would try to be a politician.
That is the problem. I mean, unless you've got a better idea, you've got to go along with the least bad option. I would say income tax. Would you be comfortable with that?
Because that would affect you,
and this one wouldn't.
Well, it would only affect me if I was earning enough.
Well, I presumed your husband and your son worked.
Yes, my husband's retired now, but okay. My sons work, and I'm a doctor's receptionist, which people hate.
I love doctor's receptionists. I think you're one of the most misunderstood and unfairly maligned constituencies in the country. But as I said, we digress. 10:30, Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The government has backed Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving part of the M25 motorway. Ministers insist the £49 billion expansion will comply with legal and environmental obligations. A Ukrainian official says President Zelensky could visit the United States this week to finalise a deal to end the war with Russia. Talks are taking place between American and Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi today. And prepackaged milkshakes and lattes are expected to be hit by the sugar tax in an announcement ahead of tomorrow's budget. The Health Secretary is expected to tell the Commons later the government's moving to end the exemption for milk-based drinks. LBC weather, dry and bright for most, some showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's Airalo.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's absolutely fascinating to me. There's a bit of dispute over whether he actually said it or not, or what he actually said. I used to quote this all the time, because doing this job changed me in almost every imaginable way, because it exposes me to so many different perspectives, political and moral, social and behavioural. I guess the trouble, John Steinbeck once wrote about his fellow Americans, was that we didn't have any self-admitted proletarians. Everyone was a temporarily embarrassed capitalist. This is his theory on why socialism would never work in America. You would think, wouldn't you, that at a time of epic cost of living crises, you know, real kind of problems making ends meet, property inflation being a large part of these broader problems, you would think that the population would be absolutely ripe now to recognise that the relatively small number of people who live in homes worth more than £2 million should pay a few grand a year more in a tax that's based on their property value rather than their income. You just would, wouldn't you? I mean, when would we be ready to say, well, let's go after them? Because rich is a hard thing to pin down. Wealthy is a hard thing to pin down. I'm one of those people who thinks that wealth is determined by assets rather than income. You can be a relatively high earner, but you're living just within your means. You're not going to have much to leave to your children unless you start recalibrating and rejigging the arrangements. Many of the conversations I have must reach your ears as obscenely privileged. I mean, talking about the idea of a £2 million house being relatively normal. I mean, it's just not statistically, but there are streets in the capital. I live in the capital. There are streets where it is normal, relatively normal. Last time we did this phone-in, almost every caller rang from Islington. I don't know if you remember that. It was funny, but also illustrative. Because, you know, like Fiona, you could have paid tens of thousands of pounds for a house 50 years ago that is now worth over £2 million. But I find it hard to muster up sympathy for the idea that you're still not wealthy. You are wealthy. And this is a wealth tax. And that has to be a good thing if you accept the necessity of raising more money. If you reject that, that's fine. I mean, I think you must be bonkers. But if you accept it, and I'm not even going to make you take responsibility for the 8% drop in GDP you personally inflicted on the country if you voted for Brexit. None of that really matters. None of the reasons really matter if you put Boris Johnson in Downing Street and the epic cost of his mismanagement of COVID is on you as well. Or perhaps you were comfortable with what the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail were telling you about Liz Truss and that financial apocalypse. That was on you as well. All of the reasons why we've got these problems, notwithstanding, we've got them. So where do you go? Answer, the people who can find a few more quid and the people who can be compelled to pay a few more quid. Who would it be that objects to that? Answer, lots and lots of people who don't fit in the category of being required to pay it. And I find that philosophically fascinating. I might be rich one day, so I'm opposed to this tax. Is that something that is a consequence of brainwashing? Have we actually been gaslit into that position as a population? Or is it some sort of innate human instinct? I might be rich one day, therefore I'm against wealth taxes. But you're not rich now. So where are you going to get the money from? Where do you think the money should come from? 0345 6060 973. John's in Edinburgh. John, what do you reckon?
I tend to agree with you that you have been gaslit over the last tens of years by newspapers that say, I mean, most people in this country, if you go to them, you say to them, paying tax is a bad thing.
Yeah.
It is a bad thing. In other countries, not gaslit by certain newspapers, who don't pay any tax in this country, by the way, and are foreign owned, which is incredible, but they decide what we talk about. But in other countries, they don't have that situation. They see tax as being a good thing. Where
are you sure? I mean, can you name a country, and then someone else can ring me and say,
Norway,
John's talking
Sweden,
gibberish.
Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, all of the Nordics.
Yeah.
They understand that public expenditure protects private investment.
They also have a much smaller differential between the lowest earners and the highest earners, which is probably part of the process, isn't it?
I wonder why.
So it is the people with the absolute most who set the tone of public discourse, which leads lovely people like our last caller thinking that this is a bad tax, even though A, it doesn't affect them, and B, if the money doesn't come from the people who it does affect, it will actually come from her.
Correct, but only in this country.
Yeah,
in
maybe.
Other countries, they don't have that, where they have more education. You could talk for a weekend on this subject about inequality in this country and who makes the rules, etc., etc. But let's not go there. That would take a weekend. But purely that expenditure, public expenditure, protects private investment. So if somebody's got a £2 million house, and all around them is mayhem.
Yeah.
It isn't going to grow that much. Where if they have nice cafes and restaurants and a tube and a tram and
schools,
all that
a nice park, bin collections,
lampposts. Guess where it's more pleasant to live and guess where it makes it more valuable? It's as simple as that. It is a good thing. It is a positive thing.
So the more your house is worth, because your property will go up in percentage points,
yeah,
the more you benefit from the infrastructure that is funded by the council tax. I'd never thought of it like that. It's blooming obvious when you say it out loud. But that yeah. And then the objection from people who are never going to be on the hook for this kind of tax is, well, when I am in that world, when I win the lottery, I don't want to pay £4,500 a year to live in a £2.5 million house.
But let's put that into perspective.
Go on.
By an ad I heard on your show a couple of minutes ago.
Oh, be careful. I forget what the rules are governing adverts, but you know, I mean it. There are some we're not really supposed to talk about.
The Government Act. This was a government
Act. That's all right. I'm feeling booed.
Okay. So if it's £4,500, that's roughly a tenner a day.
Okay? Yeah.
Roughly a tenner a day.
No, it's not. Yes, it is. Sorry.
It's a bit more than a tenner a day.
Yeah.
Okay. But to go into London in a car costs £20 a day. Like, this is a good deal.
Because you get to live in a really expensive house in the best city in the world in return for £4,500 a year.
With all the beautiful infrastructure around you, we go around the corner and have a really good cup of coffee.
Aye.
And meet your pals. Come on.
And also, dream of the day where you are required to pay £4,500 a year to live in an amazing home. Because that's something to aspire to, and we're supposed to be a society of aspiration.
You've made it then.
It's £12.33 a day, to be precise.
Okay.
Bargain.
That's a good deal. How much is a cup of coffee in London? How much is a pint?
£4. A pint?
Oh,
you won't get much change out of a tenner in some pubs. About £7.50, £8.
Deal. There was a lovely thing done some years ago in an American program. And they asked a really, really wealthy billionaire, how much was he worth? Okay?
Yes.
And he said, I reckon I'm worth about $300 or $400 million. That's some time ago. Before Musk and all these guys.
Yeah.
And the guy who knew him pretty well said, no, I looked at the Fortune 500. You're worth an awful lot more than that. And the guy said to him, sorry, do you mean how much money I have or how much money I've given away? Because what I've given away is what I'm worth.
Oh, wow. That's nice. I like those sort of stories. But he will be the exception, won't he? In the same way that person who looks in the mirror and talks about what he likes and what he loves, if he's prepared to uproot to Dubai because he doesn't like the idea of being a tiny bit less wealthy next year than he is this year, then he doesn't really like or love anything except money. And most of us aren't like that. Most skin people aren't like that. The people who need the money the most in our society are not the people who love money the most. I'm about to go a bit St. Paul, aren't I? I'm about to go, because it's not money that is the root of all evil in the Bible. That's another misquote. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. And a lot of our policies, a lot of the discourse, and John has just nailed this down quite brilliantly, are set by people who do have a love of money, who love money more than anything else, which is why they buy newspapers and television stations and try to change the public discourse to reflect the fact that people like them shouldn't be paying more. And it works. It works because you have no such thing as poverty in these sort of societies, even when people are visiting food banks. You just have temporarily frustrated millionaires. Barry's in Richmond. Barry, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I'd first like to say is, thanks for having me on, I appreciate this.
You're very welcome.
The council tax, the poll tax was introduced in, I remember, 1990, for 3 years. That was deliberately orchestrated by the Conservative government to create division, and it was a testing gun. And then, of course, they introduced the council tax in 1993, if my memory serves me correct.
I'm going to just press fast forward, if I may, and bring you into 2025 and tomorrow's budget.
Right, OK, then. But I think the budget is deliberately going to create more division between people, because people who are the super rich, they have funds spread in multitude of scenarios that we don't even know about.
Yeah, but if they've got a mansion, they'll be on the hook for this. I appreciate offshore trusts and ways of dodging things. These exist. But anyone who can be compelled, are you really going to go to the trouble of setting up an offshore trust to save yourself $5,000 a year on a property tax?
The problem is there might be people who live in... Because am I right in thinking it's banned, it's the three top bands where they're going to increase this mansion tax?
That's what it looks like at the moment.
Yeah, but just because somebody lives in band F or G, that doesn't mean they might have not a great deal of money in the bank. So they're not still not based on ability to pay in deliberately...
they're doing it on the most visible, the most easily visible asset.
Which is
your house, which is your home. So this is where I demand that you come up with a better idea.
I think it should be based on ability to pay, because the problem is at the moment...
If you've got a £2 million house, you can pay. And if you can't pay today, you can pay tomorrow, because I'll stick a charge on it, and when the house is sold, we'll take the money that we're owed.
But is it still going to be based on the amount of people in the house?
No.
And this is the unfair thing.
It's the value of the house. It's not unfair. Yeah, it's the fairest thing they could possibly come up with, except an income tax rise. And they won't do that because they're terrified of... Well, they've made a manifesto pledge not to, and they're terrified of what will happen to them if they break it. So come up with a better idea.
I think there should be a tax, a local tax based... It should be based on the ability to pay and how much money people have in the bank. Because there might be people...
So that's a tax on savings. That's a tax on savings.
But if people have... I mean,
they're
there are
doing
some
that.
People who have...
They're doing tax on pay. I mean, they're changing pension rules to raise a bit of quids. So they're already doing that. This is you need to replace the 400 million, which they probably won't raise anyway, but are going to try to, by introducing this. I mean, what else is there? If not property. Also, if you introduce your rule, then I'm just going to buy a bigger house tomorrow with all the money that I've currently got in the bank.
The problem is the top band of tax is 40%. Am I correct in thinking that?
No, it's 45.
Oh, it's 45. So if someone is on a huge gargantuan salary, they're still paying less than, say, someone on £100,000.
Yeah, but we've already said we can't do... They're not going to do income tax. They've been scared off doing income tax. I'd do income tax. You're objecting to the mansion tax. I don't really understand why.
I object to it in the sense that people who are just above the band in, say, F, they might be affluent, but they're not super rich.
They live in a £2 million house. You're in Richmond, Barry. I presume not Richmond in Yorkshire.
No, yeah, but my flat's not worth...
I know yours isn't.
Worth.
You're sticking up for people who somehow...
I'm not sticking... No,
well, you
I'm
are,
not,
you
I'm
are. Not, you can, if you're living in a £2.5 million house and you can't find £4,500 a year, then you really should just move.
I've never voted Conservative, actually.
I'm not talking about your house. I'm just pointing out that we have this mythical idea that there are people living in £2.5 million houses who are being held hostage. Arnold Schwarzenegger's out the back door with an Uzi saying, "You cannot leave this house." If you can't find four and a half grand a year... and you're living in a house that is in the top tiny percent of the entire country, then move.
Yeah, I mean... I think the way things are going in this country, and I think it's just symptomatic of what's going on.
You can't just go back to your comforting phrases like division and symptomatic. What would you do differently? And if not them, then who? Those are the questions. What would you do differently? And if not them, if not us, if not me, then who? Who? 03456060973.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whether it's education, you literally don't know what the right thing to eat is. And I've got to be honest with you, I find that kind of hard to believe.
Whether it's the fact that you're all working so hard, you haven't got the time to meal prep. There is a very, very clear link between poverty and obesity. But only really in the Western world. Why?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Kev, it's Black Friday madness. Customers, calls, emails.
Then you need something built for busy, like iPhone 17.
And right now, you can save £144 on a 36-month plan in EE's Black Friday sale. iPhone 17, a delight at work, even when your coffee's gone cold.
Nice one, Kev. Have a fresh hot coffee on me.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE, better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT. Ends 4th December. Terms apply.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background, so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
You're already looking at the Galaxy S25 Ultra. Top tier specs, powered by Galaxy AI with pro-grade camera. And now you can save £250 thanks to our incredible Black Friday event. The upgrade you want and the best deals you probably hadn't expected. But let's not hang around. This deal won't. The Galaxy Black Friday event is on right now. Buy yours at Samsung.com. Purchase from Samsung.com by the 2nd of December.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:50 and we've got one. We don't need to do this because we should take all the money away from the foreign nationals, says Shane. So there you go. I'd forgotten about that. How can I possibly forget about that in Brexit Britain? The reason why we shouldn't have a tax on people who live in homes worth £2 million or more is because we're giving all the money to the foreigners. We're giving all the money to the asylum seekers. So people living three to a room in a repurposed travel lodge are the real drain on our society, and we should go to them to raise more cash, not to the people living a mile up the road in an eight-bedroom mansion. Well played, Shane. It is not idiot's corner for you, actually, because, you know, you don't end up in a position like that by accident. You have been very, very carefully groomed and gaslit into precisely that perspective. You'll be telling me next how hard you work. That's another thing that really grinds my gears. You got it most during the VAT on school fees suggestion, which was, the world's tiniest violins. Probably going to need restringing, aren't they, this year, given the amount of whining that you hear from people who are, by definition and statistically, the luckiest and the most financially privileged in the country. I work bloody hard to send my children to private school. What do you think that bloke over there sweeping up leaves all day in the absolute freezing cold does? Do you think he's on a jolly? Do you think he's taking it easy? Do you think he's... I mean, who are the people you see working that make you think, blimey heck, I couldn't do that? I don't think it's radio presenters. I don't think it's newspaper editors. I don't think it's, pen pushers and bean counters. I just don't think it is. I work bloody hard running my own business where I get to set my own hours and wages and decide who... The people I look at and think I couldn't do that are currently on roofs. Or at least I really wouldn't want to do that. I could do it if I had to. Steeplejacks. No, that's not true, actually. I've always thought there's a certain romance to being a steeplejack. I blame Fred Dibner. But this rhetoric, this utterly unchallenged, absolutely brain-dead Daily Mail rhetoric that being wealthy is a proof of how hard you work is probably the most insidious and ridiculous element of tax-based or economic rhetoric that this country has ever seen. I work jolly hard, says someone who writes one newspaper column a week. From a gated community in Florida about how awful Britain is. I work bloody hard. And then you pretend you're on the side of the strivers. Oh, I'm on the side of the strivers. Don't mention the people sweeping the streets or the nurses who are visiting food banks. They don't work hard at all. They're living it up. They're living it large. They're taking the mickey. Don't mention the people who are struggling to make ends meet while putting in 40, 50, 60-hour weeks. They don't work hard at all. They don't work hard at all. It's the people doing the jobs that are really hard work. They're the ones that read the Daily Mail and live in houses that are worth more than £2 million and resent absolutely the idea that they might have to pay a little bit more. What's the line Shane's got here? People have paid a large amount of stamp duty and they will pay inheritance tax, and you want to tax them for doing well. Not taxing them for doing well, you're taxing them for living in houses that are worth more than £2 million. If you don't like it, move. That's how the right wing works, isn't it? If you don't like it, move. If you don't like it, leave the country. If you don't like it, move house. If you don't like it, change your bulbs. That's what you do, isn't it? That's what you say to people when they complain about injustice and unfairness. If you don't like it, move. If you don't like justice and fairness, well, if you don't like it, move. It's the same principle, surely. Caroline's in Chiswick. Caroline, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
So I live on the street of unremarkable houses that you used to live on.
Oh, fantastic. but they're not worth £2 million yet, are they?
No, but I've got a double-fronted one, so okay. I might be very close to it. I don't know, but I might be very close. I'm completely fine paying with it for it. I think I'm not going to be happy. You know, the fact of the matter is I don't have £4,500 sitting here waiting to be spent on a tax. So I am going to have to reallocate some money, but I have got the money. If I can afford to live in such a house, I can afford to pay that tax.
It's so self-evident, Caroline. I mean, I mean, people can wriggle as much as they want, but if you are living in a house like that, you can find, and it won't be for, if you're just over the threshold, it won't even be £4,500, will it? Because it will be tapered. But you will be able to find it in the same way that, you know, if you need a new boiler, you can find the money because you're lucky.
Completely, exactly. So for me, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you know, you have loads of champagne socialists, which I am one of, you are one of, etc. And we will say,
I'm more of a vodka martini socialist, actually, I'm more of an IPA, an expensive IPA socialist. But yes, I take your point.
Yeah. I'm French, so I'm champagne, but that's fine. but the, you know, we all kind of say, oh, we need to pay more tax, we need to help people, etc. And then when it comes down to paying more tax, I can't afford it. It's like, well, you can't make an argument at a dinner table and, you know, do all of this and then not pay up when it's time to pay up. I think it doesn't go quite far enough in terms of the wealth tax, personally. I think we need to go further than that, because I think a lot of people living in £2 million houses will be hard workers and will not have 10, 20 million in the bank. So I think we also need to try and push it further. But it's a start. And
I wonder if, I mean, I don't know why they have, I suppose, the taper. I don't know where the taper will end. But people living in mega mansions should be paying a through the nose for the privilege in relative terms. Because, it's a bonus that you pay for. It's there. I mean, the self-evident nature of it doesn't get undone by however hard you worked or when you left school or what it is you've done to achieve this extraordinary privilege in life. I guess what it is, and Caroline has nudged at this, that people don't recognise their own privilege. I'm not privileged. I'm not lucky. I'm not blessed. I work jolly hard for everything I've got. And also, perhaps a sense that I deserve it. I deserve to live in this house. And that person over there who actually works more hours than I do, doing backbreaking work, they don't deserve it. If you get that into people's heads, then they'll defend somebody else's privilege, even though they don't enjoy it themselves. Which leads us back to, if it's not the Daily Mail, it's deference, isn't it? Leads us back to forelock tugging and deference. Thank you, Caroline. 10:57 is the time. Rob is in Ricklandsworth. Rob, what would you like to say?
How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome, mate.
I just want to speak about the mansion tax. You mentioned about, you know, people raking up leaves, working in the cold, whether it's roofers, road workers, etc. and stuff like that. So I actually fit into that category. I come from a council house. My wife comes from a council house as well. And we've worked since the age of 16 extremely hard, 6 days a week, to provide for our family. We also live in a house that's well over £2 million. And obviously this mansion tax is a huge worry for us, because obviously we put all of our money and savings, etc., renovations and so on, into this property that we'd like to hand down to our children. And at the same time, I think it's a little bit unfair that we're going to be taxed on something. One, I've paid a huge amount of tax in as I've gone along, And two, I've come from nothing. So it's not as if I'm sitting around doing any, you know, not working hard, not out on the street, et cetera, and stuff like that. So just, as I say, I mean, that's where I feel it's a little bit unfair.
I don't really understand which bit of your biography you think would should exclude you from this tax.
Well, the fact that, why should I be penalised for work? So what does it say to someone who, if you want to achieve things in life,
yeah.
What does it say to someone that if you get to a certain point, you have to pay more tax?
Well, you already do. We already live in that society. That's what tax thresholds do on income tax.
And I get that. And I think they should be putting up income tax. I think they should be keeping an eye on what they spend on welfare.
Yeah.
You know, keeping an eye on how much, you know, if are people actually entitled to to mobility cards, et cetera, and stuff like that, rather than just wasting money. I know we're going a little bit off piece here, but... We're not,
because you don't arrive at opinions like that by accident. You could turn on the laziest phone-in host in the world and he'll be talking about motability and benefits, and people like you in your £2.5 million house will be thinking, yeah, why don't we go after that person there, that disabled person with a car? Why are you coming after me in my £2.5 million house? So it isn't off-piste, is it? It's very, very relevant to this conversation, because that's what you've ended up believing.
But at the end of the day, what you should be doing as well, they should be doing checks to see if everyone actually needs all of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We shouldn't be talking about people in £2.5 million houses paying a few grand a year. We should be talking about disabled people in cars.
So, but what I'm saying to you...
I know what you're saying to me. I'm listening to every word, Rob.
But what I'm saying is, when I started off, I was in the council house. And
and if you were still there, you wouldn't have to pay a mansion tax. But you're not, so what?
But that makes... All you're doing is just once. It's completely one-sided.
What do you mean it's completely one-sided? I'm going to get hit with it. I'm going to get hit with it as well. We're on the same side. We're both going to be able to do our patriotic duty and plug some of the holes caused by ludicrous political decisions over the last 14 years.
Absolutely. But at the same time, the government needs to turn around and say, right, well, where can we save money?
Let's go after more disabled people.
No, it's not. So, again, it's just that's just
that's the one you came up with, Rob. That's the one you reached for first, mate.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you need to be more careful.
Well, I've got good news for you. BMW and Audi cars are going to be removed from the car scheme for disabled.
Absolutely, because I was with someone at the weekend and they said that the amount of money that is wasted on these is just astronomical.
Yeah, but it's the same amount of money, regardless of whether you drive a tiny car or a big car. It's the allowance that you get that you choose to put towards whatever car you want. How is that wasted?
Putting up mansion tax, how much is that going to raise? It's going to probably
about 400 million.
Million, maybe.
Yeah, that's what they hope.
Whereas I'd rather pay a little bit more tax and it be distributed correctly.
But not to disabled people with cars, though.
Sorry?
Not to disabled people with cars.
No, I'd rather it be if they need it, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So why do you think that story in the last 6 months has become so big, Rob?
Because
12 months ago, you never gave it a second thought. What do you think has happened in the last 6 months with regards to the motability scheme? It's made a nice bloke like you think that the reason why I shouldn't have to pay a mansion tax is all these disabled people driving around in cars that they don't deserve.
How do you think that happened, mate? That's the first thing you raised when you rang this programme. If you let me speak for 1 second.
If you answer the question that I've asked, how do you think that happened?
With regards to... Because obviously it's been publicly made, people are being made aware of it.
By whom?
More often. By everyone. It's common knowledge that there's a lot of people on benefits.
Wasn't talked about 12 months ago. What has happened? Why is it the first thing you reach for? Robin Rickmansworth, looking for reasons why he shouldn't pay tax on his £2.5 million house, is talking about disabled people in motability vehicles.
How has that happened? You've missed the point completely.
Of course I have, Rob.
You've missed the point completely.
Well, remind me what it is.
What I was saying to you was that when I started working, we had nothing. We've worked extremely hard.
I heard all that. Okay? That's not a point. That's a biography. I'll wait for it to be published.
Why should we be penalised when the
disabled people are driving around in cars
isn't being utilised correctly?
Well, that's not what you're saying. You're saying you shouldn't pay it because you've worked hard and you grew up in a council house. And I'm saying, what's that got to do with the price of eggs?
I'm saying the money, the tax as well. Okay, that I've no problem in paying more income tax. No problem at all. I think that's the way it should be done. More income tax, clever spending on welfare. Cut the welfare slightly.
Which bits?
Again, it's not. I'm not down to that to make that. But, and I know you're going to say, "Well, you made that accusation," but at the same time, I just think it needs to be...
I know you do, and you're not alone, and loads of people think that they shouldn't be paying more tax, and fair play to you for thinking you should be paying more income tax, but that goes on welfare as well, and that goes on motability, and with the greatest of respect, if I was having a phone in about whether or not you should pay more income tax, you might be ringing me to tell me that you'd happily pay a mansion tax, but you know that you should be paying more income tax. We've got no way of pinning that down. But listen to yourself, and I say this with love. The idea that the financial plight of this country is caused by people in motability vehicles, people on universal credit, or asylum seekers in hotels is absolutely ridiculous. But it has been very deliberately, very carefully, and very successfully seeded in the minds of perfectly decent people like you. And it goes hand in hand. The reason why the rhetoric is so attractive is because we think it lets us off the hook. We somehow think that it will make us better off to resist these kind of ideas. But it doesn't. It really doesn't make us better. Well, the only thing that makes us better off is a proper redistribution of wealth. And that involves going after the people who own the newspapers and who buy the television stations and who punt the rhetoric that has got you complaining about the motability scheme in the context of a conversation about paying $2,000 or $3,000 a year for the privilege of living in one of the most expensive houses in the country. And that's the end of my TED talk.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government has backed Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, despite concerns about moving part of the M25 motorway. Ministers insist the expansion will comply with legal and environmental obligations. The £49 billion project should be operational by 2035. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has more details.
We do understand that this plan will involve demolishing 700 homes and, crucially, moving parts of the M25 so that it passes through a tunnel underneath the motorway instead. So Heathrow says that this could see another 276,000 more flights a year and would also see an expansion of Terminal 5-2.
A Ukrainian official says President Zelensky could visit the US this week to finalise a deal to end the war with Russia. Talks are taking place between American and Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi today. Russian strikes on the Ukrainian capital Kyiv overnight has reportedly killed at least 6 people. The comedy writer Graham Linehan has been cleared of harassing a transgender activist but found guilty of criminal damage to their phone. He told the court he was angry at being filmed by Sonia Brooks outside a London conference venue last October. Prosecutors argued his social media posts were repeated, abusive and unreasonable. Linehan has always denied the charges against him. Pre-packaged milkshakes and lattes are expected to be hit by the sugar tax in an announcement ahead of tomorrow's budget. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is expected to address the Commons later. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, urged Labour MPs last night to unite and back her fully tomorrow. Green Party leader Zach Polanski says he wants fairness to be at the heart of the budget.
Tough choices for multimillionaires and billionaires. It's time to tax for rich. We're calling for a wealth tax on assets, so we are taxing unearned wealth as much as we're taxing earned income.
And you can hear Rachel Reeves' budget live and in full here tomorrow on LBC. And China has launched an emergency rocket to rescue astronauts who are stranded on the Tiangong space station. The station was without a flight-worthy vessel to take the astronauts home after it was hit by space debris earlier this month. The China Space Agency says the crew are functioning normally and are in good condition. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 8 at 95.53. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most today. Some showers in the southwest and another mild day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Amazon Black Friday week deals up to 40% off. Get the perfect gift for your father-in-law, the Deal Hunter. If only he knew about the deal you got on his gift, he would embrace you, just like he does deals. Oh. Oh, I guess we're hugging now. Well, that's a long hug. Oh, it's still going. Oh, it's a Black Friday week hug. It's a deal hug. Up to 40% off this Amazon Black Friday week. Ends 1st of December.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
8 minutes after 11, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know what it sounds like to you. Is it the same phone in? I mean, the budget's tomorrow, so we'll step back a little bit from fiscal stuff. But is it always? It shouldn't be me on the hook for this. Whether you're talking about pensions, whether you're talking about means testing, whether you're talking about income tax, whether you're talking about mansion tax, is it always, it shouldn't be me? I don't know how you deal with that. I don't know how you move it. It should be someone else. And of course, we're living in a country now where when you're looking for the places where you'd raise the money that lets wealthy people off the hook for paying more tax, you go after the least wealthy people in the country, whether they're driving motability vehicles or employment support or claiming unemployment benefit. The budget will be live on this program tomorrow. So if you needed further proof that I don't work hard, then I'll be clocking off at 12:30 and leaving you in Sheila Fogarty's very capable hands once the budget actually begins. Of course I won't. Me and Eleanor will be sitting in the next room taking notes and having intellectual debates while Keith makes the sandwiches about what exactly is going on and what the budget means and what does it do and da-da-da-da-da and wingy-dee-dee-doo. So that's live from 12:30 tomorrow. We'll also be bringing you the best post-budget, like every other media outlet in the country, we will be bringing you the best post-budget analysis in the business. But ours will actually be them. Unlike all the other media outlets claiming that they're about to bring you the best post-budget analysis in the business, ours really will be the best. How do I know that? It's a secret, but I do. So make sure you don't miss that. And then on Thursday morning, I will probably pretend that I know what I'm talking about for an hour or two as we attempt to rake over the coals of whatever it is that Rachel Reeves finally gets around to pronouncing. Okay, a sad story now. I think I owe you a... Do what? I don't know, because you listen to this. I nearly said bilge then. And strangely, I don't. So I'm with you for 3 hours every take, give or take commercial breaks in the news. And I can remember most of what I've said to you, but I can't identify the tone of how it's reached you. So sometimes it can reach you in a completely different way from how it's reached someone else listening to exactly the same programme. Those are real moments, aren't they? When I'll read you two texts. It was particularly pertinent when we were talking about Israel's genocide in Gaza on a sadly, tragically regular basis. But I would be accused by two different listeners of having unconscionable bias in two completely different directions. So you can listen to the same 10 minutes of radio and conclude that I'm hideously biased against or hideously biased for the same thing. Two different listeners, two completely different experiences. And that, I don't know, probably has as much to do with substance as style. It has as much to do with content as tone sometimes. I don't know, I don't understand it, I never will, but I will never cease to find it fascinating. So when I've talked to you about tatty flags cable tied to lampposts near you that, frankly, you neither wanted nor welcomed, have I sounded fearful? I hope I haven't. You know, this sense that you get from usually kind of middle-class radio presenters who are terrified of offending the sensibilities of a mythical cohort of people. Well, you say, well, some of these people have legitimate concerns. Some of these people are doing it to demonstrate pride in their country. Have I done that? I really hope I haven't, but I've got a feeling that I might have done. That the idea that if you want to demonstrate pride in your country or in your history, you go and tack a bit of Chinese tat to a lamppost in the middle of the night while wearing a balaclava helmet is obviously absurd and borderline obscene. But I worry. I mean, so loud are the voices. I think if I was still on Twitter, then I might have fallen foul of recalibrating my own position for fear of attack. Oh, why do you hate this country? I don't hate this country. I want to pay more tax. Nothing says I love this country more than wanting to pay more tax after tomorrow's budget. Or at least not wanting to, but believing that I should. That should really be the beginning and the end of patriotism or patriotic duty, but of course it isn't. And the way that these flags proliferated over the summer was designed, I think, to intimidate people who found it unpleasant. The idea that you were supposed to pretend that you believed it to be patriotic, because if you didn't, you would be like the man who doesn't wear a poppy times a million. And yet pretty much everybody you spoke to agreed that they were at the very least unattractive and at the very worst profoundly intimidating. And I that's why I happened upon, I forgot to give you the follow-up yesterday, I happened upon some polling at the weekend that found that the number of people that considered the lamppost, the flags on lamppost, as being primarily about anti-migrant or anti-minority sentiment dwarfed the number of people who thought it was an expression of national pride. So if you ask all adults why people are doing this, 50% will say mostly as a way of expressing anti-migrant and or anti-ethnic minority sentiment. 50% of people polled. 25% claim it was an expression of national pride. And somehow, and I think this is the mealy-mouthed radio presenter pretending that it can be both. 19% thought it could be both. It's an expression of national pride, and it's also a way of expressing anti-migrant or anti-ethnic minority. How can it be both? Unless you're proud, I suppose, of expressing this kind of anti-minority sentiment. So I want you to hold that story in the back of your mind when I tell you that a Union Flag exhibition has been cancelled because, according to the Daily Telegraph, because of fears it may cause offence. The more you read into the story, the more possible it becomes that the politically neutral nature of the Union Flag has changed so much in recent months that it would no longer be a politically neutral exhibit. The artist is unhappy about this. They describe it as censorship, and I think they might have a point. Until you consider the possibility that the very nature of the flag has changed, it has become, as it was in the 1970s, a symbol of something ugly. That is the view of a majority of British adults polled by YouGov at the weekend. It has become, well, unless, of course, you don't think that an expression of anti-migrant or anti-ethnic minority sentiment is ugly. And that's the England flag. The numbers come down quite a lot for the UK flag, for the Union flag. Not a lot, but it's closer. 39% see the Union flag as an expression of anti-migrant or anti-ethnic minority sentiment. 30% see it as an expression of national pride, the Union flag. Ain't no black in the Union Jack was the song that used to be sung by the National Front in the 1970s and quite possibly by one or two former pupils of Dulwich College, of which more later. But I want to know whether or not you have felt your feelings change. And I want this to be a conversation that everybody can contribute to. I don't want it just to be, and you may think this is a bit crass of me or insensitive, but I don't want it just to be about people who feel targeted by it. People who both believe that it is a way of expressing anti-migrant or anti-ethnic minority sentiment and also belong to an ethnic minority. I we've done that, and you are, you know, very, very welcome. Because the way your feelings have changed in some ways is a weather vane for the rest of us. But I want to know. I want to know whether this campaign over the course of the summer, undertaken by men with links to Stephen Yaxley-Lennon's English Defence League, by men with questionable records, representing organisations who have filed no accounts, or all of these schemes, these programs of flag raising, I want to know whether it's changed the way you feel about the flag. And I want to know, if it has, how we claim it back, as it were. Because I think, I don't know. Here's the thing, right? And I told you at the time, and I know that he is comfortable with me sharing this, but I told you about a pal of mine whose children are mixed race. He's black. And he sent me a picture of his daughter's beanbag, which she really wanted. It was a big deal when she got it. It's a Union flag beanbag. And he noticed that she'd covered it in her bedroom with a throw. He wasn't listening to the show that day, but he's got in touch subsequently. He's listened to it on catch-up. And they've now found that the little girl's Union Jack ribbons have been pushed to the back of the drawer that she keeps her ribbons in. And they don't think that it's a coincidence. Her mum, who is white, if that matters, was really upset to discover that the Union Jack ribbons had been pushed to the back of the drawer, upset because she worries that their daughter doesn't feel a part anymore of whatever it was she felt a part of when she really wanted a Union flag beanbag and she used to love wearing her Union flag ribbons. And I'm reading this from my own WhatsApp. When she tried to talk to her about it, she clammed up and shut down. So here we are in a world that is repeating all the prejudice and othering that was standard when I was growing up and trying to figure out where I belonged. I don't know what that would be like. I have no idea what that would be like, how you explain to your child of colour that the flag is as much theirs as everybody else's, when 50% of the population believe that these flags have been put up as a way of expressing anti-ethnic minority sentiment. And I'm really sorry if I didn't go in hard enough on this. I think I did, but maybe I was a bit of a coward. I don't know. That's what I mean about saying I don't know how stuff reaches your ears, because I've known in my bones that this was a hideous, hideous campaign designed to do precisely what it's done to my friend's little girl, designed to make her feel that the flag was not hers, that the streets were not theirs. That's my view. What's yours? 0345 6060973. Has this bizarre summer of tatty flags, what do you do now if someone comes towards you wearing a Union flag t-shirt? 12 months ago it was fun, right? 12 months ago it was fun. Or an England flag. Maybe the England flag is even more pertinent, but I don't want to exclude my listeners in Wales and Scotland. That it was fun, right? You'd have it on merch, as the kids call it. You'd have it on a beanbag in your bedroom. It was fun. Now it's, I think, become a little bit aggressive again. It's as if you're saying something other than, oh, I'm English. I think you're saying you're not. Have I got this completely wrong? Remember, I'm never going to know what it's like to be on the receiving end of racial prejudice. And I'm certainly never going to be one of those white people who tells people who do know what it's like to be on the receiving end of racial prejudice what they should or shouldn't be feeling and what they have and haven't got wrong. Plenty of people prepared to do that, particularly in my line of work. But I suppose in a way I'm asking if it's worked. If they really were trying to reclaim the flag for racists, does this polling from YouGov show that they've succeeded? 0345 6060973. So there's two questions. Has it worked? Has it been reclaimed by racism? And then the second question is, how have your feelings changed about most obviously the England flag, but also to a lesser extent the Union flag, given how they have been co-opted by people that a majority of the population believes are expressing anti-migrant or anti-ethnic minority sentiment? And I'd love to hear you say no, 0345 6060973, but if you say yes, what do we do next? What do we do next? How do they make you feel? And have they re-delivered our flags to the racists who monopolised them in the 1970s and early 1980s? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. It's 11:22. LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family-owned since 1931.
The EasyJet Holidays Black Friday sale is now on. Get up to £200 off package holidays. At prices that can't be beaten, you'll soon be sitting poolside in Greece, or Turkey, or Spain. Book now. Search EasyJet Holidays. Get out there. Selected dates. Sale ends 11pm the 2nd of December. See price guarantee online. Minimum spend required. Apple protected. T's and C's apply.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams? Please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:24 is the time. So two things, really, that might help focus the mind on what we're talking about now. The first is the World Cup. When the World Cup comes around next year, will you be more or less likely to stick an England flag outside your front window? Because I think a lot of us will be less likely to do it, knowing that 50% of the population think that the round of flags going up this summer has been an expression of racist sentiment. I think they're right, by the way. And you can, if you want, cling to the idea that some of the people who did it were proper patriots. And they were wearing balaclava helmets because it was cold. And they were doing it in the middle of the night because they were very busy during the day. And they did it predominantly in areas when they had sought neither permission nor approval of the residents, was just because, again, they were too busy. That's fine. You want to cling to that, you cling to it. But the World Cup, and what about Jerry Halliwell's dress? Not the England flag, but the Union flag. What about Jerry Halliwell's dress? That would feel different today, wouldn't it? I think there was a schoolgirl who went to school in a Union flag dress and ended up addressing Yaxley Lennon's rally. So already the dress has changed in tone, hasn't it? I think it has. If my introduction didn't land with you properly, think about Jerry Halliwell's Union flag dress, which absolutely nobody had a problem with at the time. But now, has it changed? Has it changed for you? Has it succeeded? If it was a campaign to reclaim the racism associated with our flags in the 1970s, has it worked? Laura is in Hemel Hempstead. Laura, what would you like to say?
I'm so glad you're talking about this, James. There's hardly any flags in Hemel that I've seen.
Okay.
But my son lives in Potter's Bar. And as I come off the M25, it's flags everywhere. And it just makes me feel really uncomfortable. I'm white British.
Yeah.
My dad was Irish, and he said when he came here, there were notes on the doors, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs.
Yeah.
And this feels like the same thing. It's so disgusting. It kind of does remind me of Reverse. When I, 15 years ago, I worked in a college in Tottenham.
Right.
And I put the English flags on my car because it was the World Cup.
Yes.
And this white English teacher said, oh, that's racist. And I thought she was bonkers, so I put more flags on my car. You know, and this is so sad. And it's actually made me think, maybe next year I'll put lots of flags on my car.
Yes.
Just to say, yeah, I support England, and I hate football, actually, but...
Well, that's a different phone-in, Laura. You can ring me. You can ring me next year for that one. But that's what I meant by... That's what I meant by retaliation, because it will feel different next summer to put a flag on your car than it did for, even if with your slightly overexcitable colleague in Tottenham 15 years ago, it will feel different next summer from how it felt at the last World Cup.
Yes.
Because of these people, because of what they've done.
Yes, yes. I felt like writing to Potter's Bar Council and saying, can you get those flags down? Because it's disgusting, you know.
And then you'll be called someone who hates England if you did that. You'd be accused. I mean, that was what. We can laugh because it's funny. But that was the plan. They really, really, really wanted them to be taken down or to be ordered to take them down so that they could phone up the Daily Mail or phone up the Daily Telegraph and claim that their rights were being impinged or that their patriotism was being maligned. Whereas, in fact, what you've ended up with is some reform councils having to order them to be taken down so that they can put up the Christmas lights. That's been happening in a bunch of places. It is, and it's not the same as the no dogs, no blacks, no Irish sign, because that would be illegal now.
Yes.
But it feels similar, doesn't it? It seems to be an outward rather than an inward intention. It's making an announcement to people rather than celebrating a community of people.
Yeah.
I'm with you, and I'm glad you rang today. And I think a lot of people who feel like Laura feels may be a little bit frightened of saying so because of the very carefully confected idea that it means that you're not supportive of our country or you're not patriotic. It's in many ways the opposite. You know, I think of Gareth Southgate's Dear England letter a lot. I think Gareth is in next week to record a full disclosure, which I'm really looking forward to. But if you think about the journey that the country has been on, even since he managed to unite us all as manager of the England team, and the early signs of where we were going with the taking of the knee and the people queuing up to attack it for reasons that they weren't quite prepared to articulate, but which you suspected you probably understood, I would be very, very surprised if the average flag raiser had not had quite a big problem with England footballers taking the knee. I just would be surprised. I'd be very pleasantly surprised if I'm wrong, but I would not be surprised at all if I'm right. It is 11:30. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The government has backed Heathrow's £49 billion plan for a third runway, which includes moving part of the M25. Ministers say the airport expansion will comply with legal and environmental obligations. 150 firefighters are tackling a fire at a warehouse in West London. Crews were called to a premises on Bridge Road in Southall shortly after 9 o'clock this morning. And Graham Linehan has been cleared of harassment in connection with social media posts he made about a transgender activist. But the comedy writer has been convicted of criminal damage after throwing Sophia Brooks's phone during an encounter last year. LBC weather, dry and bright for most, some showers in the southwest, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking. And I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor, John.
Norman. Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadim.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules apply and can change.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:33. So the numbers are slightly different on what the flag has become than they are on why people are putting flags up. So 39% of British adults believe that the England flag has this year become a racist symbol. And that is actually heartbreaking. The question is slightly different in the next bit of the poll. Why do people think England flags have been raised on lampposts? And then you're looking at a massive plurality of people replying that it is an expression of anti-ethnic minority sentiment or anti-migrant sentiment or both. So the flag is not yet as widely perceived as racist as the people putting up the flags are. And yet, that feels like a bit of a luxurious distinction, doesn't it? Perhaps. I don't know. How has this strange campaign over the course of the summer, that for some time it felt as if you weren't even allowed to question or criticise it, how has it changed the way you look at that flag or those flags? John's in Leighton Buzzard. John, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. I think you asked at the start of the hour what we could do about it.
Mm.
And where I live, in a village just outside Leighton Buzzard, the proliferation of union flags was put up on telegraph poles, which I felt very uncomfortable each time I drove into the village. It was that sense of we're giving out a message that some people aren't really welcome.
It was the scale as well, wasn't it? I mean, because if it was one flag in one village, it would feel very, very differently to the sort of bombardment. It was you know, it felt aggressive, oddly, the number. If you walk up a street and it was one on every lamppost, you're sort of thinking, well, how is that more, whatever the phrase that they want to pretend that they're doing it for, how is that more of an expression of national pride than just having one on every 20 lamppost or one on every 50. It was like the wallpapering of our streets that felt deliberate.
A number of pedestrian crossings and roundabouts in Leighton Buzzard itself were painted with red crosses. And so the temptation was I wanted to rip them down. And I thought, well, they're not mine to rip down.
That's
so
true.
I thought, to balance things out, I would put up some flags of my own alongside these the telegraph poles. So I put up a Ukraine flag, Palestinian, a rainbow flag of peace, an Israeli flag, and a United Nations flag. And they were ripped down straight away.
What? Where did you put them?
Underneath the Union flag.
Oh, I see. So again, in the public space?
In the public space, yes.
That's a lot of flags.
It's a lot of flags. So I then, at the other end of the village, after the ones I put up had been taken down, I then put up exactly the same again. But I thought also, I'll balance it out a bit. I'll put up a Welsh flag, Northern Ireland, Scottish, St George's Cross, and the Union flag as well.
Yeah.
Those ones remained, and all the others I'd put up have been ripped down again. So
what does that tell us, do you think? Because, I mean, you could say that the flags of these islands have a different currency on these islands than flags that are not of these islands. Mm. But, I mean, it's an odd thing to do, to tear down flags, as you say, because they're not yours to tear down in the first place.
Well, that's what I felt. And the message I was trying to give is one of absolute inclusivity. And so I was quite careful with the flags that I chose to put up, because I thought, you know, we want to welcome people, you know, we want to encourage peace and inclusivity, but that message doesn't seem very welcome where I live.
That's an interesting point. That's a really powerful point as well. It is not a message of peace and inclusivity. So then what is it? And the latest polling suggests that that twice as many people think it is an expression of racism than think, or anti-migrant sentiment, than think it is an expression of national pride. I would be interested in having somebody tell me how it's an expression of national pride. How, you know, what does it make you proud of when you see a badly painted roundabout or an upside-down Union flag, or an England flag hung very carefully and correctly on a lamppost on a street that nobody asked for it to be hung on. What am I supposed to feel proud of when I see that? It's not a rhetorical question. I don't know the answer. It's not that I know the answer and I want to force you to confront it. What am I supposed to feel proud of? You know? What is it? That expression of what? So be proud of my country. Oddly enough, I'd be prouder if everything looked really clean and tidy. It's kind of like the opposite of a pothole problem, isn't it? I'm going to make the street look tattier than it does already in order to prove how proud I am of my street. Is that really? Does that work? So is there an answer to this question? Or is it just proof that the 50% of people polled who think it's an expression of anti-racist sentiment or anti-migrant sentiment are just right? What am I supposed to feel proud of as I walk down the road to be confronted by limp nylon flags displaying the insignia of my country? What am I supposed to feel in my heart or my soul? Yes, I'm so proud. Mark's in Kiley, in Surrey. Mark, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Mark.
It's the sheer scale. I live in a lovely little village, Yule Village in Epsom in Surrey.
Yeah.
And all the way from the A3 into Epsom, on every single lamppost, there's got to be over 200.
Good Lord.
Flags have been put up overnight.
Yeah.
And I can see them out of my back window. It makes me feel like I'm in Derry or somewhere, because I'm Irish heritage, as you could tell from my name.
What, Mark?
Yeah, Kylie. But I think the council have been brilliant. I spoke to the local councillor, and then we got a residents association who had been voted in. It's a very, very old-fashioned village. And they've been brilliant. They say it's divisive.
Okay.
We have asked Surrey County Council to take them down. And I wrote to Surrey County Council very politely, because I can see these streetlights. And these are on a dual carriageway, so you can actually see the streetlights swaying in the wind. So from a health and safety point of view, I said, I'm a little bit worried because, you know, one could fall on my garden. And they said, no, we're not going to take them down because it would upset the people that put them up.
Yeah, and that is, I think, probably what they were hoping for. That they would attempt to take them down, and then they'd have a real grievance to pretend to be exercised by. So I understand why they haven't done so.
But it's letting the bullies win, in my humble opinion, because they haven't asked all the residents here if we would like them, if we would put them up. And I said to the local councillor, who's a lovely fella,
yeah,
we have a lovely war memorial in the village. I said, I've no issue with someone putting a flagpole up there, flag as big as you like, put a flag up and be proud of the people that died for the country. But this just looks tacky.
Well, we've got one outside the library, and it was, you know, flying proudly on Remembrance Sunday, and there was a little ceremony outside the library in Brentford. And then on the road leading up to it, there were half a dozen of the ones that you describe. And I felt they actually detracted from the moment rather than...
Precisely.
Distracted but actually took something away from the profundity of the proper flag, the official flag, that of course nobody has any problem with, even people of Irish extraction, like you and me. It's a funny one, isn't it? It's that idea that all of the people who've been whining about censorship or freedom of speech or freedom of expression are the ones who actually don't want voices like yours to be heard. These flags are not expressions of patriotism. They're expressions of something dark and ugly, and everybody knows it. But we're living in a country where people are a little bit frightened of saying so. I'm glad you're not. I'm glad nobody is today on the programme, but perhaps we've come at it a little late. I hope not. I really do hope not. But my views certainly changed when I read those messages from my friend about his daughter and her relationship with the Union flag. Once a really lovely thing, and now not. 11:42 is the time. Ian is in Chelmsford. Ian, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Ian.
I've just kind of had enough of this country. By the way,
yeah.
I'm a black man, so I'm not coming from that side of things. I've had enough of the country, of what it's turned into. And when it comes to the flag, I'm totally, totally patriotic. I actually went to like one of those fee-paying schools, but where you're brought up on being Patrick. Actually, I did take the exam for Dulwich College, so I might have met your best mate. But I didn't get into that one. But anyway,
it'd be 21 former school friends making various claims if you had done, rather than just 20, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but so I've got like mixed race kids, and you know, I actually feel for them at the moment that they're growing up in this temperature where we live. There's flags like everywhere. They're all over the place. But you'd like talked about the football and stuff.
Yes.
And like, well, see, last tournament, I actually, as a black man, had the flag like in my car.
Yeah.
Like, and drove about with it because I'm proud of it.
Of course you are.
But my white mate, like, who's so left-wing, right, was like, you can't have that. It's racist. And I'm like, but come on, mate. Think about it. Think about it. The very fact that I am waving it, surely, like, takes the power away.
And your mate is, I mean, politics aside, he's stuck in the 1970s when it did get co-opted by the far right as a symbol of aggression. Both the England flag, the St. George's flag, and the Union flag.
Yeah. Right?
There ain't no black in the Union Jack would reach your ears a lot more violently than it would reach even mine. So I understand where your mate is coming from. He's just a bit behind the curve. But by the time the next World Cup comes around, he might be right again.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Uh-huh. So we've got to take it back. We can't let them win. So I would say to every black person who is proud to be, and I'm not British, I'm English, by the way.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, you wear that flag and you, like, you wave that flag and you wave it with pride.
I think you're right. Don't let them win. Yeah, I think you're right.
Don't go around taking down all the flags. Just like if every single person is waving the Union flag or the flag of St. George, take the power away from them. I remember, like, back in the day, back in the early 80s, I had this T-shirt. And it was a quote from the White Citizens Council of Alabama, and the T-shirt said, "Rock and roll will bring what's it? Rock and roll will bring the white man down to the level of the Negro." And I used to wear that T-shirt with pride, just to tell people what it was all about. And I think that's what we need to do with the Union flag.
Yeah, I don't know. It probably takes longer to win stuff back than it does to lose it, if you see what I mean. But yeah, the process has to involve what you describe. And 11:45 is the time. I don't think you did anything wrong. I'm just thinking about that slogan and the fact that it would need a little bit of context if someone had just turned on the radio to understand why you were raising it. And so, if anyone has just turned on the radio, obviously it's quite a, It's a word that appears in the strong category on Ofcom guidance, but I think in the context of what Ian was saying and what he was describing, it's pretty clear what the usage was intended to convey. Thank you, Ian. That's just for my benefit, really, to be honest, not yours. But the question of how anybody could think otherwise, you'd have to be pretending, wouldn't you? You'd have to be pretending to think otherwise. Why is this the only country in the world where you're not allowed to fly your own flag, says an idiot on my inbox? Because you are. No one is suggesting that you're not allowed to fly your own flag, mate. I mean, honestly, I don't know how hard a wobble you would have to give your head it to arrive at the conclusion that you are being told you can't fly a flag. I mean, think about this, right? Here are 5,000 biscuits, okay? And By forcing someone to eat 5,000 biscuits, you are doing something very, very different from offering somebody one biscuit. Nobody is saying you can't have a biscuit. They're just saying, I don't really want to eat 5,000 against my will. Nobody is saying you can't fly a flag. You're just saying, why have you strung up so many? And why, when you're doing it, are you carrying a banner that is attacking the Mayor of London? What's that got to do with national pride? Well, how come all of this stuff goes hand in hand if it's not, as 50% of the population believes, an expression of racist sentiment? But I like that idea that this is how we begin to claim it back. 11:47 is the time.
The Budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining, and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means, and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for The Budget, live and in full, as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down. And, of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The Budget, tomorrow on LBC.
Our Black Friday event is now on. So book a Jet 2 holiday now and save £200 per couple. As always, you'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included too. Whether you want a last-minute escape or to get next year's holiday sorted, book with just a £60 deposit per person and secure your Black Friday saving now. Jet 2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. After natural protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 11:51. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And that's the thing, isn't it? This... slightly hard to pin down point at which something that is at the very least innocuous and at the very best inspiring becomes unpleasant. And flags are such a weird thing to get excited about. I think in the United States it's illegal to set fire to the Stars and the Stripes. I may have imagined that. But flags have an extraordinarily complicated relationship with patriotism. It is, on one level, just a piece of cloth. And then, of course, on another level, it's an expression of something quite deep and profound. But there is a point, there's a journey from innocuous and or inspiring when you see a flag. And I lean towards the second, actually, particularly on occasions like Remembrance Sunday. And there is a journey to where 50% of the population believe it is now, which is... an expression of anti-racist sentiment, and that has been caused by events of this summer when people have been putting them up on lampposts in numbers that are, I mean, ridiculous. And had there been much fewer of them, then that journey would have been much slower. But the journey from innocuous stroke inspiring to obnoxious stroke racist has been breakneck, hasn't it? I think largely as a sort of real-world articulation of what has become normal on Elon Musk's Twitter, where being racist is actively encouraged and rewarded, but confining it to social media must have felt very restrictive for Billy Buncher Numbers with a bulldog avatar and 48 flags in his profile. So they came up with the wizard idea of carrying those sentiments onto our streets. But of course they couldn't be as blatantly or as obviously racist as they can be on Twitter because of the law that is still applicable in this country, albeit not on social media platforms. And that's where we've ended up where we are. That's where we've ended up here. I'm cautiously optimistic, oddly, as we near the end of this hour, about the ease with which it will all be claimed back again. Not least because there's a World Cup on the horizon. Mary is in Belfast. Mary, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. The thing for me, and I suspect for quite a lot of people like me who were born and brought up in Northern Ireland for a long time, is that flags are very triggering, and it's really sad to watch what's happening in England now, yeah. because I think that they've become... It's the cheapest, most visible way to provoke people or reassure them, depending on the side they're on.
And or reassure them, depending on what side they're on. And we were all largely on the same side this time last year, but this campaign of flags has roots in the kind of sectarianism or division that has polluted your home for so long.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was a thing called the Flags and Emblems Act back in the 1950s, where the government made it illegal to remove the Irish flag but kept the Union Jack flag, and that changed. But now you've got areas, you've got not only Irish tricolours and British Union Jacks, you've got Israeli flags and Palestinian flags, depending on which side people feel affiliated to.
Oh, Lord.
And so my feeling about flags is I don't mind flags, you know, if they're officially there or if you want to support your team in a sports competition or even at last night at the proms. But people not asking permission or talking to people about putting them into their communities, that's where it's wrong.
Well, we wouldn't have countenanced it in many other contexts, would we? If you'd, you know, if people had put up football flags or people had put up... I don't know, flags of their favourite pop star or whatever else it might be. And the idea that you're... I think perhaps the mildest subtext you could attribute to them, the mildest aggression would be, you're not allowed to complain about this. That is contained within the context of the flag being put up. And the more that you put up, the louder you're shouting, you're not allowed to complain about this. And then... The most violent expression would be the one that is parallels in Northern Ireland, which is very distinctly saying to parts of the population, you are not welcome here.
And also to say to take a flag down can actually cause more tension and anxiety than putting one up.
Yeah.
Because, I know of people who've tried to remove flags from the neighbourhood because they didn't want them there and then have had visits. So then, you know, that's a real question about, you know, I love... the idea of a Northern Ireland where we didn't have any flags, because I think it would be a much happier place.
I mean, I've always found people who've got a flagpole in their back garden a little bit strange, but then I watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang for the umpteenth time the other day, and I found myself feeling warm towards it again. But, you know, if you've got a flagpole, if you've done it properly, or not imposing on anybody else, it should be a rather or utterly uncontroversial practice. But if you're... That's the thing, isn't it? It's like an animal spraying territory, or somebody saying, keep out. And who are you saying keep out to, if not to, in this country, as a consequence of this campaign, if not to ethnic minorities, and then over in Northern Ireland, to the Protestant or the Catholic, the Loyalist or the Republican constituency of your own population. So there are parallels there, the difference being that the people being told to keep out by the flags in England at the moment don't really have their own their own estates and their own territories, where other people would be told to clear off, despite the best efforts of, again, online liars to pretend that they do, or indeed Robert Jenrick's feelings when he arrives in Birmingham. I don't think, despite his misgivings or the UKIP woman feeling mad when she sees black people in adverts, I don't think anybody is telling her that she's not allowed to make adverts featuring white people are telling her that she's not welcome. Mary, thank you. Riz is in Waltham Forest. Riz, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning, James.
Hello.
James, I was just telling your colleague that I've actually been, I'm second-generation immigrant child, Indian parents. I've actually been selling Union Jacks, flags, bunting, etc. on Amazon for over 10 years. And as you can imagine, business has been good for us. We started the business to celebrate things like the Olympics, yes. You know, Jubilee. You know, it's been brilliant, and we've celebrated being British, and we feel British. We don't feel Indian at all.
Sure.
But shall I tell you the most ironic thing?
Yes.
3 weeks ago, my children, they went to do their Duke of Edinburgh Silver Award, both brown children from a mixed heritage. And they were doing it in Kent, and they came home and they said to me, oh, Mum, we saw flags up everywhere. We felt a little bit uncomfortable. And they were in a group of six children, of which two were English children. And they got on amazingly well.
Of course.
And they said, we kept telling them two children to walk in front in some of the parts because we didn't want to be the ones walking in front. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, the same thing that I sell and run a business from is now intimidating my children, and they feel really uncomfortable about it. But I'm like, I feel like in such a weird situation now.
Well, that is an absolutely extraordinary story.
No, and you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. My warehouse, it's moved to Waltham Abbey, and all around my warehouse, there's all Union Jack flags up. And I actually laugh with my dad, who's an immigrant, as Indian as they come. I'm saying, Dad, you're here, like, counting up your figures on your Amazon sales whilst these people are putting the flags up. And they don't even realise that you're helping immigrants to make a better life for themselves here.
So yeah, but only three or four, to be honest. You might be making life worse. But I mean, that is just such a clash of perspectives. It's a thing of beauty. It really is funny. Is it just Union flags, or do you do the St. George's ones as well?
Oh, we do flags of all the countries.
Without encouraging people to set themselves up in direct competition to you, if I could see a graph of your sales over the last 12 months, what would I see in the context of what you were doing last year, for example?
Oh, so you know the Union Jack flags, usually there's only a spike in sales when you've got, like, the Jubilee, Olympics, yeah. World Cup, things like that. Never usually in a random August in a year. This August was
August.
Great. September was like, okay, like, we... No, so
it's
going to
be a good
Monday.
Christmas, kids. It's going to be a good Christmas this year. Love it.
So, yeah, but this is what I mean, that it's kind of like we sold them because we are proud British people. My children do the Duke of Edinburgh Award. They can't feel any more British, and now we're in this situation.
But they can feel a bit less British when they're marching through Kent and see these flags everywhere.
Honestly,
and tell the white kids to move to the front. What did you say to them? I mean, did you bother, or did you try to make sense of it?
No, I did tell them that they were... I did explain that they're safe, because they actually have to do another expedition. I was like, your leaders are close by, you don't never have to feel like that. And they're part of scouting, so they had their neckers on and everything. So I said that... You're in a safe space. Don't worry. Everyone knows what you're doing and things. So,
still, that sense of intimidation, I think, was deliberate, albeit that it's been done with flags that have been filling up your bank accounts all year. That is the perfect way to end. That, to me, is a quintessentially British story of absurdity, entrepreneurial spirit, community. And cohesion as well, because of the six kids on that march being mates and the Duke of Edinburgh waiting with his medals at the palace. Well, you've got to do gold to get a trip to the palace. But there you go. Stick that in your pipe or stick that up your flagpole and salute it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government has backed Heathrow Airport's £49 billion plan for a third runway, which includes moving part of the M25. It was chosen over a cheaper proposal, which involved a shorter runway and not moving the motorway. Ministers insist any expansion must meet the UK's climate obligations in full, though. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark is following developments.
Airlines had basically been lobbying against Heathrow's plans. They are worried that essentially they're going to see their landing fees spiral, because obviously moving the M25 is going to be an incredibly costly job. We know how difficult transport infrastructure, costs just spiral out of control. Think of HS2. So there will be a final planning decision taken by 2029. So it's not completely all for takeoff just yet.
A senior Ukrainian official says President Zelensky could meet with Donald Trump this week to finalise a deal to end the war with Russia. Talks are taking place between American and Russian representatives in Abu Dhabi today. In his nightly address, President Zelensky said the plan has correct points, but sensitive issues remain and need to be discussed with Donald Trump.
Putin wants legal recognition for what he has stolen, to break the principle of territorial integrity and sovereignty.
Sir Keir Starmer is also due to host a virtual call with Ukraine's allies this afternoon. The government's confirmed plans to extend the sugar tax to pre-packaged milkshakes and lattes. The levy could add a few pence to some milk-based products. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is expected to set out details in the Commons shortly ahead of Wednesday's budget. You can hear the Chancellor's budget live and in full here tomorrow on LBC. Graham Linehan has been cleared of harassment in connection with social media posts he made about a transgender activist. But the comedy writer has been convicted of criminal damage after throwing Sophia Brooks's phone during an encounter in London last year. Linehan has always denied the charges. 155 fighters are tackling a fire at a warehouse in West London. Crews were called to a premises on Bridge Road in Southall shortly after 9 o'clock this morning. People are being urged to avoid the area. And internet safety groups say new guidelines for social media firms should be mandatory if they're serious about tackling online hate. Ofcom wants to introduce a limit on comments and a series of other measures to tackle misogyny and abuse towards women and girls. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 25 at 95.60. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and bright for most going into the afternoon. Some showers in the southwest and a milder day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Eleanor just called them bits and bobs. We haven't used that phrase before to describe the fun and games, you might also describe. I haven't got any today. I haven't got any missing word rounds. I haven't got any headlines that I can remove a word from for comic effect. I haven't got any missed information, stories that are very deliberately misleading. What else do we put on the bits and bobs list or the fun and games list? Yes, unhinged headlines. I haven't got any of those because the Daily Telegraph has stopped playing. We haven't done Woke Watch for a long time. And listen, you should let us know. We had an email address at one point for Woke Watch, but everyone forgot about it. But if you spot stuff that I can use as an unhinged headline or that would work for Woke Watch, it's still around, isn't it? Or other bits and bobs. I don't want old ones. It has to be new, by the way. I hope that's clear. Then do let me know. Give us a quick heads up, because I haven't got any today. I haven't got any at all. I do have a story that is close to being among my favourite subjects. Can I tell you something? First of all, let me ask you a question. When I tell you something that you've heard before, Does it feel like a sort of warm hug of familiarity and friendship? Like the time we spend together, unless you're one of the strange people that despises me and listens religiously every day, I'm not going to talk about Brexit. But when I tell you something that I have told you before, because, of course, you know, there are new people tuning in and out all the time, so sometimes I need to provide a little bit of context that I've provided in the past when approaching similar territory. But do you like it? Does it feel nice? And you go, oh, here he goes again with his business. Or does it get on your nerves? Like, flipping, eh? How many times do I have to listen to that? Because I've got no idea. And, of course, for everybody who says I like it, there'll be somebody else who says, actually, mate, I do find it a little bit irritating. But the stuff I think is important to share with you is the stuff that makes me change my mind. That makes me see things differently, because I can't imagine anything worse than doing this job for 20 years and not having changed your mind about anything. Could you imagine what that would sound like if I had exactly the same opinions now that I had in 2005 or 1995 or 1998? Perish the thought. So it was a conversation with a producer about truancy. And I was sitting in the production office, getting ready to come on air and be quite two-dimensionally and predictably angry about children who play truant. And because, you know, I was beaten at school and it's the only language I understood and some children needed to do, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely convinced that if you spare the rod, you spoil the child. If you've only discovered this program in the last 5 years or so, you possibly find this quite hard to believe. But I used to have a fairly identikit arsenal of, quotes, pungent opinions, end quotes. And children not attending school, or children... I even went down that hideous road of saying, well, we just called it naughty in my day. I don't know what all these acronyms and initials are for. We just called it naughty in my day. And I kind of meant it. I just hadn't really examined my own position properly. And if I don't examine my own position properly, then I don't get calls like the last one we got. I don't get calls that make me rethink things or that provide perspectives you never would have dreamt existed if you weren't examining your own position properly. So, and I also went to boarding school from the age of 10. So I've got absolutely no idea what it's like for parents to deal with children who can't or won't go to school. I mean, literally no idea. Because I didn't go to school from my home. From the age of 10 onwards, I went to school from a room upstairs called a dormitory. And it's a very different proposition. It's not impossible to bunk school when you sleep there, but it's much, much harder work than it is when you don't. And we were getting ready to go on air, and my producer at the time, who went to a very different school from mine, I think he went to the same school as Mo Farah, actually, out Hamwell way, but he had the polar opposite position, and he said something that I've never, ever forgotten. Never forgotten. He simply said, what on earth does a mum do with a teenage boy who's refusing to go to school if he's bigger than her? And suddenly, my carefully contrived certainty that this was all a question of being stricter and being more robust and cracking the whip and sparing the... It just disappeared. It literally in a moment. It's happened a few times over the years that we've spent together. I won't list all the times. I'll go through the greatest hits. Tattoo Nurse would be one of them, wouldn't she? But I suddenly... Yeah, what? I mean, I've always thought, because of my background and experiences, I've always thought that the answer to truant, which is probably not even the right word to use, as we will shortly discover, that the answer to truant or truancy was discipline and strictness or punishment. Because that's what my school days looked like. Every single time I did something I wasn't supposed to do, I got punished. And until I was in my 40s, I never stopped to recognize the fact that it obviously hadn't worked because I kept getting punished. Those of us who were on the receiving end of a caning were almost always the same people, in the same queue, outside the same office, waiting for the same brutality, the same punishment. So it obviously didn't work. Unless we were like sacrificial lambs who kept everybody else in order. Well, I'm not going to do that today. I don't want to end up like O'Brien, getting beaten every week. So maybe our punishment was somehow a little bit more sophisticated than we realised at the time, because it certainly didn't have any effect upon the misbehaviour of the kids that got beaten a lot. I just use beating as a metaphor for punishment or discipline. And when you come to truant, the idea that you punish somebody into behaving better, or you punish their parents, who, as my producer pointed out 20 years ago, have absolutely nothing in their arsenal to get the kid to go to school. So punishing them is utterly, utterly pointless. But you don't realise it until someone points it out to you. You're very unlikely to arrive at that conclusion for yourself. So there's a story in the news today that would lend itself very much to the two-dimensional lazy analysis that I would have brought to stories like this if I hadn't given my head a wobble and actually started thinking about things. Truancy finds, no, we put parents on awareness courses, is the headline. So they used to fine kids 160 quid. They used to fine families 160 quid, many of whom, of course, would be unable to pay it. So the tally would just be totting up every time the child didn't turn up at school. A fixed penalty notice for a child's absence. Instead of that, you get invited to attend four sessions on the consequences of missing school. And that just makes such obvious sense, doesn't it? Because the minute you get your second fixed penalty notice is the minute that anybody with a brain would go, well, this isn't working. What are we going to do differently? What are we going to do differently? But the Daily Mail know their audience very well, so they stick the word empathetic in the first line and they put it in quotes as if there's something wrong with empathy. Oh, yes, it's empathetic. This, bring back the cane. So bring back the cat of nine tails for primary school children. Empathy. They've all got it in. That doesn't quite work. So they know exactly what they're doing. And of course, the invitation to mock it and to malign it is taken up with alacrity by all the usual suspects. But I thought when I read this that it reminds us that not going to school is an incredibly complicated issue. And the best question I've ever asked you in the context of children not going to school is to tell me the difference between can't and won't. And right there, just in that single question, inspired by your stories over the years, in that single question is the nuance you need to understand why these headlines are so unhelpful. What's the difference between can't and won't? My child can't go to school. My child won't go to school. I think we'll probably stick that on the board again today as well, because it's a really interesting question. But inspired by what is going on at Netley Primary School in Camden in North London, I want to know what works, actually. It's going to be a little bit worthy this hour. It's going to be about you recalling and remembering what it was. And I will be playing the referee, so I will be reminding you that this is a story of can't, not a story of won't. The children who won't go to school need proper, lasting, deep assistance to get over whatever it is that has rendered them immobile in the context of school. I'm talking about children that get to the school gates, driven by mum perhaps, and just can't go in, but really, really want to. That is a cohort of kids that are completely and entirely misunderstood, because they fall under these headlines. They get lumped in with the won't go to schools, but they can't go to schools, but desperately, desperately want to, are entirely absent from these conversations. The more tabloid the conversation is, the more absent the child who desperately wants to go to school, hates that they're missing stuff, thinks that today could be the day that they might just do it. And mum and dad or one of them's at work and one of them isn't, and the phone rings at 8:30 and they think, oh, crikey, did they get in today? And you know they didn't, but you've still got that little bit of hope that they did. But that dad, that mum, knows the difference between can't and won't. Can't and won't. And whenever we have this conversation, which isn't quite as often as I would like, but that's the thing about favourite subjects, I focus on the can'ts. I need to It's a bit like talking about the North Kent Hunt, that, isn't it? Or Kent County Council. I focus on the can'ts, the cannots. And today I'd like to focus on the won'ts, the will nots, if I may. So there's room for you to tell us the difference. There's room for you to tell us the difference between the cannots and the will nots, the can'ts and the won'ts. But if you were a won't go to school, if you could have gone to school, but you were somehow exercising autonomy or mischief or whatever it was, what works? How do you get a child who just doesn't want to go to school to go to school? And how do you help a parent who can't find whatever it is that they need in the arsenal that is immediately available to them? 0345 6060 973. I like the sound of this headteacher. Really, the story should begin and end with the testimony that the attendance of the children whose parents went on the course has improved. I mean, that is it. It is, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Did the children of the parents that went on the courses start going to school more than they did before their parents went on the courses? Answer, yes. End of story. Full stop. Next question, please. But, of course, it doesn't work like that in media land. In media land, you've got to sneer at the word empathetic, and you've got to question the wisdom of treating these adults with love and support rather than hitting them over the head with a £140 fine. So what works? And there are two ways to do this. Parents, teachers, or former children. Spoiler alert, we were all children once. Even Jacob Rees-Mogg was a child once, hard though that may be to believe. And what works? A child who really doesn't want to go to school, as opposed to a child who can't go to school. What works? What could a parent do differently? So I've come at this for years from the perspective of the parent who can't do anything. The mother who is smaller than her teenage boy, who is refusing to go to school. And I'd like to do it differently today, but I'm going to really need your help because I'm stuck in a rut. I'm still mentally thinking of the way that we usually approach this subject. The can't versus won't, the parent who has no agency in this moment. But what about the won't? Let's do it from that point of view. How did they get you into school when you went through that period of really not wanting to? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. As a parent or a teacher, what works? How do you know the difference between a can't and a won't? And if you're looking at a won't, how do you turn a won't into a will? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And I really need your help with this. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Because I've got nothing but love and sympathy for parents in both situations. I don't think it's worth allowing the discourse to be polluted by that tiny, tiny minority of parents who just haven't got the wherewithal to realise how bad they're being. I think it must be murder. Because you feel so judged, I imagine, don't you? By other parents as well, by teachers. I can't get them in, I won't go, but they won't go. How does it work? Show me how to take a child of any age who isn't going to school and turn them into a child who is, all right? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams? Please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
DJ!
At PlusNet, we think switching broadband should be as easy as flicking a switch.
Switch!
With One Touch Switch, our team will handle all the admin. Help you wave goodbye to your old broadband provider and get set up with us instead. Switch to PlusNet today and get fast and reliable full fibre. That's A++.
DJ!
Plus. New customers only, 24-month contract, limited availability, terms apply.
Hi, I'm Andrew from New Zealand and Australia travel specialist, Travel Essence. For a tailor-made holiday unlike any other, find your way to us. Our local knowledge saves you time and money, and our experience is your guarantee of quality. we are also members of EBTA and ETOL. Amazing journeys down under start at travelessence.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 22 minutes after 12, and you know, I guess it's linked to the other subject that I think is much more important than much of the coverage allows, and that is the nearly a million young people who are not in education, employment or training. Because if you've opted out of that while you're still supposed to be in education, then I presume you're measurably more likely to end up in that category when you're no longer required to be in education. But how do you get a won't into a will? How do you turn a won't into a will? Natasha is in Leeds. Natasha, what would you like to say?
Hi, sorry, I'm super nervous.
Hey,
apologies.
It's only me. What are you nervous about? I'm a pussycat. What have you heard?
Okay, so my son, my middle son,
yes,
had a really tough time after COVID.
Yeah.
Really struggled. He was that cohort that didn't start high school.
So he's upper sixth now, is he? He's in his final year now. Is that the cohort?
Well, no. So he was... He started high school basically when they all went back to school still wearing masks. So it wasn't the usual transition, didn't have the transition days that they were supposed to have. And it very quickly spiralled for him. He struggled to... He was tummy ache, headaches.
Yeah.
And then it all continued to the point where he would cower in the corner of his room. And I mean cower. He would make himself into the smallest ball possible.
Oh, poor boy. That's unbearable for everyone.
Would actually physically throw up.
Oh.
The fear of school. It had such an... I can't begin to tell you the impact this had on us as a family.
You're doing great.
He got to the point where he was threatening to harm himself.
If you tried to make him go to school.
We went to our GP, we went to the school, who were no help at all. They said, there's nothing we can do here.
Right.
We contacted CAMHS. We did everything in our power to get our child into school. We did not sit there and wait for things to happen. We went to a private psychologist. We begged and pleaded with the local cluster service. In the end, he was able to access the medical needs service, which we have in Leeds. So he was able to get some tutoring. And he is now back in education. He is in a specialist setting that we have in Leeds, which is specifically for children who have been absent from school. And it's a tiny, weeny setting. And it is literally just for kids who have been absent from school. And it's a need that... Yeah.
And it was all on you, really, and I can hear the strain that it put you all under. But if you hadn't you looked under every stone, you
no
searched
support.
Out every possibility, and of course, not all parents are in a position to do that.
It's so unfair to say that this is on the parents. Yeah. Somehow we are sat there. You can't physically drag your child to school. And what would happen if they did?
Yeah.
If you did take that child that doesn't want to attend, what's going to happen? My son is still struggling. He still sees a therapist. He is in his last year, sort of GCSE year. Right. We don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know where he's going to go.
Well, we do know. We do know two things. We know that he's in a considerably better place than he would have been if he didn't have parents like you and his dad.
It's still so hard.
I know it is.
It's still incredibly hard. But one of the things I've been to an autism awareness setting. One of my other children is neurodiverse.
Yeah.
And it's so common. It's so common amongst children who have SEN needs.
The inability to go to school or the horror of school. Yes, of course it is.
Yeah.
And I wonder. I mean, you know, I mean, you're amazing. Let me say that, if I may, because you know the temptation
to feel like that often.
I know it doesn't. I think I know it doesn't. But the temptation to give up must be huge. And of course, some parents giving up would feel like an act of love. You don't think beyond the day after tomorrow. You just think, well, I'm not going to put him through this thing that is killing him, that is torturing him, that has got him, to use that very powerful word that you used, cowering in the corner of the bedroom, trying to make himself tiny. And what does the tabloid tyrant do with a boy like that? Grab him by the ear, drag him into school, park him. And you got me thinking about what would have happened once. And I think we know, don't we, is that, that these would have been the children who really did get lost in the system and who really did get worse and worse and worse and worse, rather than getting looked after and accommodated and given a chance to improve. The numbers might have changed, but the reality hasn't changed. It's just that society now acknowledges diversity and difference and tries sometimes to address it, rather than just, you know, they'd probably have ended up in jail or something like that.
I genuinely think if we'd have continued pushing him, he wouldn't be here today.
Oh, Natasha.
And that's really hard to say, and it's a conversation I've had often with my husband, but yeah. If we'd have kept on pushing, that he would not be here now. He's still so fragile.
Yeah, I had a similar conversation with a friend of mine the other night, and she said exactly the same thing, and she also said that the hardest thing in many ways was that nobody gets it. Everybody thinks it's, have you tried this? Or have you tried that? Or in my day, that we'd do that or this. And that difference, I think that distinction between can't and won't is at the very heart of everything you've said. He couldn't. It wasn't that he wouldn't. He couldn't. And that puts you in a position that is very, very rarely acknowledged, because everybody thinks you must be doing something wrong or that you could be doing something differently. I love the fact he's the middle boy, because that means that, same parenting approach, completely different results. It's nothing to do with what you're doing and everything to do with what's happened to him, what's happening to
My eldest is a teacher, so we've done something right. we've done something right. But it's, I still feel so very, very desperate and so very let down as well, because we did try every service and every avenue, and we appealed to the to school, and a lot of it is
cuts. I mean, there are some local authorities where CAMHS won't even give you an appointment unless the child has.
Well, we're still waiting for CAMHS.
Yeah.
I think he'll be an adult before.
You're great.
Before that ever happened.
And you've given hope to some people listening to this. That's all you need sometimes. It's just the idea, and it's not over for you. You can't unclench, can you, for want of a better word, Natasha? You never unclench.
I still don't sleep well.
I bet you don't.
I still don't sleep well.
Because you love him and you worry about him. But at least, thank God, you recognise that he couldn't do the things that society wanted him to do, that you wanted him to do, that he wanted to do himself. That's another point that's always absent from these conversations. They've got this image of, I don't know, just William going scrumping apples instead of going to school. Instead, you should have an image of a little boy, an 11, 12-year-old boy, trying to make himself invisible in the corner of his own bedroom and puking at the thought of being forced to go to school. Because you want him to go to school, and he does now. The approach that we have taken for the last 100 years, since Victorian times, is not the approach we should be taking today. Natasha, thank you so much. Take care. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
The government has chosen Heathrow Airport's plan for a third runway, which will mean rerouting the M25 through a tunnel. It's hoped flights will start operating by 2035. The co-creator of Father Ted has been cleared of harassing a transgender activist, but found guilty of criminal damage to their phone. Graham Linehan told the court he was angry at being filmed outside a conference in London last year. The government's confirmed plans for pre-packaged milkshakes to be subject to the sugar tax. A technical consultation will be published next year. LBC weather mostly dry today with some sunny spells, light rain in the north and east, and a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
Mm, how so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 12:33. Not entirely detached from what we're talking about now, but we were talking about it more yesterday. Wes Streeting's just made an interesting announcement in the House of Commons. I'm going to play it to you twice. First time I'm going to play it to you is with the words nanny state said in that tone, all right? So I want you to have the words nanny state. I want you to have that bouncing around your brain while you listen to this.
Obesity robs children of the best possible start in life, hits the poorest hardest, sets them up for a lifetime of health problems and costs the NHS billions. So I can announce to the House we're expanding the soft drinks industry levy to include bottles and cartons of milkshakes, flavoured milk and milk substitute drinks. We're also reducing the threshold to 4.5 grams of sugar per 100 millilitres. Mr. Speaker, this government will not look away as children get unhealthier and our political opponents urge us to leave them behind.
And now I want you to listen to it with this statistic bouncing around your brain from research that was shared with LBC yesterday. A child, the poorest children in class are twice as likely to be obese than the wealthiest children in a classroom.
Obesity robs children of the best possible start in life, hits the poorest hardest, sets them up for a lifetime of health problems and costs the NHS billions. So I can announce to the House we're expanding the soft drinks industry levy to include bottles and cartons of milkshakes, flavoured milk and milk substitute drinks. We're also reducing the threshold to 4.5 grams of sugar per 100 millilitres. Mr. Speaker, this government will not look away as children get unhealthier and our political opponents urge us to leave them behind.
So when you see the coverage of this tomorrow, or when you listen to the coverage of this tomorrow, this is a bit of homework for you. I just want you to ask yourself this question. Is this coverage coming from a place of concern for the child or concern for the people making money out of that child's misery or obesity? That's all, because there will be one or the other. You'll be able to tell. Is this coverage coming from a place of concern for the child, or is it coming from a place of concern for the people making money out of that child's poor health? I think it'll be quite easy to tell. We may reconvene tomorrow and examine some of the evidence, although it is a curtailed show tomorrow because the budget will be live on LBC from about 12:30. And when you look at stories about awareness courses for the children, for the parents of children who won't go to school, possibly can't, but could with the right help and support. When you read the word empathetic in quotes, you see the Victorian word truancy in a headline and you hear a slightly sneery tone of voice when people are discussing it. Is that coverage coming from a place of concern for the child, or is it designed just to make other people angry with parents like Natasha or arrogant? I don't know quite what the word is, but it's pretty easy to tell, right? Is this coverage designed to help the child? or is it designed to do something else? Oh, we shall see. Ryan is in Basingstoke. Ryan, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. We have an ongoing thing with our daughter where she wasn't going to school, and there'd be a performance every morning. Mm. You know, a lot of stress caused her mum and I are split up, and she would be, you know, full-blown fights with her mum about not going to school, feeling ill, feigning illness and stuff like that. And it all came to a head this summer when we were meant to have a family holiday abroad, and in the end she didn't come because she had a complete meltdown about leaving and coming on this holiday.
Right.
And when I spoke to her mum about it, it then turned out that she'd not been going to school. Every day there'd be a fight. Mum would be late for work. Just constant arguments and fighting about it to when the school is now getting involved.
Right.
And threatening fines, etc. And then to the point where mum was also asked to go and do some parenting courses.
Yeah.
And
just mum?
Just mum, because I was unaware at the time.
Okay.
You know, I said the girls come to us every couple of weeks, and they live on with their mum. And when we started talking about it and got involved and then started talking to my daughter about it, but then also started speaking to the school counsellors about it, what had been told to me was that we had a naughty child, effectively. And when we, not from the school, but from family and things around that. And when we started speaking to the school, we got to the bottom of the fact, and when I gave them the information that what was happening with us and what happened with the holiday and stuff, they said this is all in line with a child that suffers from quite severe anxiety.
Yeah.
And an anxiety with regards to, like, leaving the house, going somewhere they're not comfortable in and stuff like that. So we spoke to my daughter quite a lot about it when we would see her, and then found that there was a lot of bullying going on at school. She wasn't happy at school, you know, and with in the realms of what was going on. And so we did a lot of communicating with the school, the counsellors at school, and her. And actually what we've ended up coming to is this term in particular, bar the very first 3 days of school that she missed when we were first around aware of this, she hasn't missed a day since. And what we've been doing is communicating every day. I message her every morning and every afternoon before and after school. We have regular phone calls and communication, but then also regular communication with the school, and also making her aware of that we understand what she's going through, but also that, you know, what the consequences of her actions are, and understanding that. And she's 13, and, you know, we just found that clear communication seemed to work. I'm not saying that it won't go back. We've already been warned by the school that this could all relapse again and stuff. But what we found is someone who actually the school reports are improving.
Well, also, even if things do go into reverse, she now knows it's something she can get over because she's got over it before.
Yeah, but also she's got somewhere to go. I got angry with her, not once have I kind of told her she's stupid or that she's naughty or whatever else. We've actually
just back up a bit on
what's
that.
Going on.
Who was calling her naughty? Did you say family members rather than the professionals were reaching?
Other family members, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was the story that was being given to me, is that she's naughty, she's disobedient, that she just won't listen, you know. And
whereas she was in quite severe pain.
Well, yeah, and she was feeling sick, you know, and we kind of would have these arguments with her mum would have these arguments with her every morning, like, you're not sick, you just need to go to school, I'm going to be late, et cetera, et cetera. And when I spoke to our older daughter about it, she said, yeah, you know, there's literally every morning is a fight. Every single morning they fight, they argue, and it gets quite horrible to be around because, you know, they're having a tough time with it. And then we found, just by kind of communicating clearly, showing some understanding.
And you and your ex-wife did this together?
We are doing it together now, yeah. We weren't before because I was unaware. And what it turned out was that she wasn't talking to me about it because she was embarrassed about the situation,
yes,
which I understand.
Yes, of course.
You know, she felt like she was going to be judged as she was doing a bad job. And as I explained to her, I'm here for you as well as the girls. I want everybody to kind of get around this. And now we communicate on it. You know, we talk about what's going on.
You know, listening to you, the very idea that this could have been addressed, let alone fixed, by smacking you with a £140 fixed penalty notice, it just must be reaching people listening to you now, Ryan, as the stupidest thing they've ever heard.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, these courses, from speaking to their mum about the courses, she went on, she said, okay, fine, look, I'll come on your parenting course, I'll come and speak to you about them. And they were like, well, have you taken away the phone? Have you taken away this? Have you looked at these sorts of consequences? She's like, I've done it all.
Yeah.
I've done all of these
things. That's a good, that's an important word of caution, is that not every course is the same, is it?
Yeah, and she, you know, she went through, she's like, I've done all of these things. I've tried threatening her, I've tried talking to her nicely, I've tried taking away her phone, grounding her, etc. None of it works. You know, she still then wakes up the next day and is in absolute tears, screaming, shouting, fighting, doesn't want to go to school.
She was in a cannot, not a will not space. She in her own mind, she couldn't go to school.
Yeah, and that was exactly it. And we, you know, we just found just good, clear communication seemed to kind of, it's moving
and acknowledging,
I hear you,
but things are a lot better than they were, and it's not just good, well, it is, I suppose, a consequence of good, clear communication, but it's believing her as well. It's, you know, not,
yeah,
she's lucky not to have a dad or a mum who goes, anxiety, there's no such thing, I don't know what you're talking about, we just had to pull our socks up in my day, and unfortunately, much of the discourse, including sometimes by family members, for generational reasons or otherwise, is going to fall into that trap. That's why it can be such a lonely time, I think, for parents in the position that you have found yourself in, particularly your ex-wife as well, who was dealing with it on the day-to-day basis, because everybody thinks they know. Heard it with Natasha. Have you tried this? Have you tried that? It's not. You're talking about this tiny number of children who are scrumping apples. I know that's a really anachronistic phrase, but the idea that you're Tom Sawyer or someone, you're bunking off school to go and have larks, to go and have fun, that will be, I reckon, 5 to 10% of children who aren't going to school, maximum. And even they're reachable, but they're not the same as your daughter or Natasha's little boy. And they are children who are in need of proper help, and happily they've both got it, and people listening to this will be taking notes mentally or possibly even physically to recognize the simple fact that if you're in this kind of situation with your child, it's not about taking the phone away or being stricter or banning them from watching I'm a Celebrity or whatever else I could say to make myself sound horribly old and out of touch with modern parenting, or at least modern life. But it's about acknowledging reality. Empathy is a good word. Anxiety is a real condition. Combine the two and you might start making things better, not worse, for the people that you love most in the world. Kelly's in Wokingham. Kelly, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. First of all, I'd like to say thank you so much for addressing the can't not won't debate. My daughter's 10. She's classed as what the local authority in school say is EBSA, and that stands for Emotionally Based School Avoidance.
Okay.
And avoidance alone implies that there's a choice there.
Yes, it does.
So she's 10. She struggled with the school attendance since she was 7. She would wake up in the morning, be, you know, all of the excuses. I can't go in. I can't do this. I'm sick. I've got a tummy ache. I've got a headache. And at the time, we didn't know that she was autistic.
Right.
She was forcibly removed from us. She would hold on to us.
Oh, God.
You know, she would kick and scream going in. We would have to get her in, shut the door really quickly and leave. And
what was that like for you?
Oh, it's awful. And that alone, you know, goes against every instinct you have as a parent.
Of course it does.
Every single instinct, but you're told this is the right thing, you're doing the right thing, they're fine when they're here. So, and ultimately that happens until they're not fine and they can't go to school anymore. And for my daughter, that just happened overnight. She went quiet. And my daughter's 10, she's very theatrical, she loves swimming, sports, ballet, she's really into her dancing and her theatre. She's not a quiet child when you know her. So when she went quiet, we knew something was really wrong. And she went quiet for about 2 weeks, solid.
Yeah.
She refused to go in. She said, I can't do it, Mummy. I can't do it anymore. And we've had lots of, lots of help. We paid for lots of help.
Yeah.
We were fortunate enough to be able to do that. But she had a period of 4 months straight out of school. She did go to school once during that time. She really wanted to go on a school trip. She loved history. She went on the school trip, she came home, and she was probably in one of the worst states we've ever seen her. She was vomiting from a migraine. She was that bad.
She's hypersensitive to outside stimuli, is she? Or she just can't, noises and things, or do we not know yet what it is that
she finds? She's over and under. So yeah. She responds both ways to sensory input.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to say it anymore, but she's high functioning autistic.
Okay.
You wouldn't necessarily know she was autistic unless she was in distress.
Sure.
She desperately wants to learn, and this is the biggest problem we have at the moment. Aww. Her attendance is about 30%. There doesn't exist a school at the moment that works for children like her, because she's not sent enough for a specialist school, but mainstream schools don't work for her.
And presumably homeschooling's not ideal either, given...
Well, again, like, we are fortunate enough that I've been able to take some time off work to spend some time with her, and then we fund her alternative provisions. So she does horse therapy,
right.
Play therapy, she has a tutor, but it's not a long-term solution for her. She still is understimulated. She still wants to be in school. She wants to be learning. She wants to have friends. She wants to have that social side of school. But mainstream schools just it doesn't work for her. It's too much.
I don't know that I should ask you this question, but I will. And there's a break on the horizon anyway, so you don't have to answer it. But I mean, if this was 20 years ago, when some of the language that we used during conversations like this barely existed, the vocabulary was... Well, where would she be if this was 20 years ago? What would have happened to her?
I don't know, and I would dread to think, like many other parents in our situation now. Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? Simple notion of recognising the reality of what you and every other parent we've spoken to has gone through, while so much energy is put into either denying the existence of your reality or pretending that the solutions are simple. Again, I mean, you recognise the luck. It might not feel like a lucky life that Kelly has described, but being able to fund privately the help that she's managed to secure for her daughter, and being able to afford to take time off work to be there, puts you in a category that I don't know what other word you could use to describe it, but a lot of parents won't have that opportunity, and their children will not be getting reached in quite the same way that Kelly's is, and that's, you know, why schools have to come up with new schemes and an awareness course for parents, which might include some of the positives we've heard here, but as Ryan reminded us, it might not. But it looks like this school in Camden that has come to the attention of the Daily Mail today has got it right. How many of the stories that you've heard thus far do you think could have been solved better by hitting the parents with a £160 fine? That was a rhetorical question.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Would you rather lots of small tax changes or a bold rise in income tax? Plus, New York Mayor Mamdani's Republican rival gives us his take on that Oval Office meeting with Trump.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Laithwaite's, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaite's. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you the best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dried cured beetroot smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:52. Apropos the conversation we were having in the second hour of the programme today, there's a brilliant TED Talk entitled Poverty Isn't a Lack of Character, It's a Lack of Cash, given by a Dutch historian and author called Rutger Bregman. And he will be in the news tomorrow, if he isn't already today, because he is giving the Reith Lecture, the sort of very prestigious BBC moment, BBC lecture, named after the founder of the corporation. And he's just revealed that the BBC have deleted a line from the speech that he recorded 4 weeks ago. And when Donald Trump announced that he was going to sue the BBC, and a lot of traitors in this country celebrated, the likelihood of him actually achieving anything in court was minimal and remains minimal. But sometimes with bullies and sundry other mafia-style leaders, the purpose of an act of aggression is not necessarily the obvious one. It's also pour encourager les autres, to make another act of something else that might make the leader unhappy less likely to happen. So Rutger Bregman correctly and entirely accurately describes Donald Trump as the most openly corrupt president in American history. And that is both an opinion and a fact. In order to refute that as a fact, you'd have to find another former president who, while in office, behaved as obviously and as corruptly as Donald Trump. And it has now been removed from the speech that will be broadcast later today. It's fair to say that Rutger Bregman is not happy about it, not least because the lecture is about the paralyzing cowardice of today's elites. You couldn't make it up, could you? About the bending of the knee to authoritarianism. And of course about free speech, because you could disagree with that, you could argue that, you could debate it. It's a lecture, not an academic treatise. But I think it's a direct consequence of Trump threatening to sue the BBC over that Panorama edit. And the guy who wrote that memo, by the way, was in front of a select committee in the Commons yesterday, and absolutely nobody there asked him why he had also inaccurately edited the Donald Trump speech on January the 6th, when he was encouraging his followers to reject the result of the previous presidential election. I find that absolutely extraordinary, and yet not remotely surprising. So keep an eye on that story. That is what censorship looks like. That is what an assault on free speech looks like. But it's unlikely that all the self-appointed champions of free speech will be exercised by that. It is 12:55. Back to school and the difference between a child who can't and a child who won't go. And it is a bit of a perforated line sometimes, but to understand one, you absolutely have to understand the other. Jay is in Wokingham. Jay, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. Hello. Just wanted to give the opinion from schools. I'm a Senko. And because I was listening to Natasha, and she said the school couldn't do anything, and that's just not true. So,
well, it is in her experience.
Yeah, obviously, but yeah. There are schools that do it well, and there are schools that make it work. We're one of those. I think
Ryan's school was like that as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, having worked in lots of different schools, I now work in a school that has a really high attendance rate, especially for SEND children. So one of the things we do is kind of a whole school thing, is that we make sure that children feel like they belong.
Yes.
We give them a real sense of belonging, and that goes across everything that we do, from our uniform to our values and everything. So as a whole school initiative, we do that. But we also put in things for those children that need an extra pull factor to get them into school.
Yes.
And for example, we have...
So it should be pulling, not pushing. I love that.
Yeah, it's Paul. We want them to want to come to school rather than want them to not stay at home, if that makes sense. So,
yes,
for example, we have a child who comes particularly early, who can't cope with the busyness of the beginning of the day, so she comes early. We have another child who comes in with his mum and they play games together for 20 minutes before he goes to class.
Mm.
We have a lot of staff around at the beginning of the day to coax the children into school in ways that are just loving and kind.
Down with that sort of thing, Jay. Down with that sort of thing.
You know, rather than this trauma-inducing, pulling children away from their parents and creating horrible experiences, we work really hard with... We work really hard with parents. You know, sometimes the parents come into the classroom. There's all sorts of things that we put in place. And we are a primary school, and yes, it's easier in many ways in a primary school. But I just wanted to kind of reassure everyone that there are schools out there that do it well.
And it's a leadership decision, presumably. It's a school leadership policy that implements what you've described.
Absolutely. It's our whole vision.
So some head teachers will get it, and some head teachers, sadly, will not.
Absolutely, and I've worked in schools, sadly, where we have said, the head has said, oh no, don't worry, we can't do anything, you know, if they're off the school premises, there's literally nothing we can do, and it's just not true, it's just not true, there is so much you can do, and you know, you can build up things really slowly, you can work with the parents, all our staff are really well trained in neurodiversity, and anxiety, mental health, so there are things that do work.
Or you can send a £160 fine round their house.
We don't do that.
And hope for the best, eh?
We don't do that.
Cross your fingers. I know you don't. I'm just highlighting the absurdity of the contrast. How wonderful that people like you exist, doing the job that you do in the school where you work. And the sooner more schools are like that, indeed, perhaps even all schools, the better for all concerned. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, everyone, this hour. And indeed, this morning. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app, or indeed the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, and pause and rewind live radio. Also, a dizzying array of podcasts, including mine. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks a lot, James. At 3, I would never, ever do it in a hurtful or insulting way. That's Nigel Farage's answer to former classmates' claims he racially abused them. It's a funny way to say yes, isn't it? Or indeed no. At 2, the BBC saga isn't over. Hear what their execs told MPs yesterday. I want to know whether you care about the BBC because you pay for it or because you believe in its continued existence. Yesterday, a mansion tax. Today, milkshakes and lattes are the latest targets for new taxation. Would you rather that Rachel Reeves just raised income tax tomorrow and had done with it? None of this salami slicing nonsense. Going to be joined by a man called Curtis Silwa later as well. He was the Republican mayoral candidate in the New York race. He'll give us his take on Trump's America.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, US officials are meeting Russian counterparts in Abu Dhabi to discuss a peace plan for Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has welcomed changes to the proposal after raising concerns it was too favourable to Russia. But he says there are still some sensitive issues that need to be discussed with President Trump. Prime Minister Keir Starmer says the initial plan did have points that were unacceptable, but many that were important.
For example, it sets out steps on security guarantees from the US and partners. This is very significant, and the discussions in Geneva took important steps forward with progress between the US and Ukraine on an updated peace framework.
US media is saying Ukrainian delegations have agreed with the US on the terms of a potential peace deal. Pre-packaged milkshakes and lattes could soon taste less sweet or cost us more. Ministers have announced the drinks will no longer be exempt from sugar tax as part of a push to tackle obesity. It's thought the changes could cut 17 million calories from the nation's daily intake. Separately, Commons Speaker Sir Lindsay Hoyle has said it's frustrating elements of the budget have been announced ahead of tomorrow's statement. The Gaza humanitarian foundation, the US and Israeli-backed aid distribution group, is to permanently close. Set up in May as an alternative to the United Nations food programme, critics say it forced people to risk their lives trying to reach the relief zones. Father Ted co-creator Graham Linehan has been cleared of harassing a transgender activist on social media. The judge said she was satisfied the comments, while unpleasant, didn't amount to harassment. Mr. Linehan was found guilty of the criminal damage of Sophia Brooke's phone, though, and LBC's Joseph Draper, who's at Westminster Magistrates Court, says he did admit grabbing the phone.
He did drop it, something he said he regretted, but he denied intending to damage it. He said she'd been invading his personal space. That was, of course, rejected by the judge. She found him guilty of criminal damage for that act.
Ministers have backed a Heathrow expansion plan that would involve moving the M25. A shorter third runway was also being considered. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was up 44 points at 95.79. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.14. LBC weather mostly dry today with some sunny spells, light rain in the north and east, and a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor John.
Norman.
Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair. George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadine.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdowne, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules applying can change.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Just 24 hours to go. In fact, literally 24 hours from now, we will be deep in listening to Rachel Reeves as she announces the budget in Parliament shortly after Prime Minister's questions. We'll bring it all to you, every bit of it, tomorrow live here on LBC, plus analysis and discussion about it immediately afterwards. In the meantime, there's still something of a guessing game going on. We do know about one or two things, and we've had rumours this week. We talked yesterday, didn't we, about the supposed and so-called mansion tax that's coming, the little in the grand scheme of things it raises. Today it's the turn of packaged milk drinks, including some packaged coffees, so lattes and milkshakes, that kind of thing. Not the lattes or milkshake that you would be served in a cafe, I'm assured. That's the latest speculation today around the budget, that the government will lower the sugar content threshold at which the sugar tax applies from 5 grams to 4.5 grams of sugar per 100 millilitres. You were hearing the stats there in the news bulletin. But Natasha Clark joins me, LBC's political editor, to talk through what we do know, what we don't know, what we think we might know about what's going to be in the budget. What's interesting about these taxes that we're talking about today, the latte and the milkshakes, is they're more examples, aren't they, of that sort of salami slicing of our money rather than any big headline announcement, which I guess we would only get tomorrow. But there's a real question as to which people prefer, isn't it? Do I want lots of little taxes, some of which I might not really notice, or is the right thing to do for the country just be bold and go for it?
Yeah, we talked about this a lot, didn't we, when there was concerns that Rachel Reeves was about to break that manifesto promise to raise income tax, which of course would have, I'm sure, gone down incredibly poorly with voters, with Labour MPs, and we did hear from a lot of people at the time how, you know, the reasons why she shouldn't do it. But we didn't really talk about the benefits that she might get out of actually doing it. And we do understand that she's probably not going to do so tomorrow. She's going to do this smorgasbord of different taxes instead, stealth taxes, freezing the income tax thresholds, dragging more of us into tax, fuel duty, alcohol duty, lots of different things that we expect to raise little amounts for the Treasury to all add up to this £20 billion black hole that we believe she needs to fill. But of course, and I think there has been quite a lot of discussion, and there were lots of MPs at the time saying, we do just need to go for this because it does raise so much money all in one go, and it really solidifies the public finances so that we're not here in a year's time, and we don't have to have another, is Rachel Reeves going to have another tax grab budget in just 12 months? And I think, you know, there was a quote really that summed it up for the in the Sunday Times for me, Sheila, that it was Luke Trill from More in Common, who we've had on the show many a time, who basically said, well, actually, we did focus group lots of voters on this topic, and the idea of breaking the manifesto promise was seen as so unpopular, more unpopular than Partygate, the PPE scandal during the pandemic, and with the winter fuel allowance as well, changing that, which obviously is so unpopular.
And the Downing Street will have known that, won't they?
I think so. I imagine they would have polled exactly and done focus groups on exactly the impact of this. So maybe it was that that changed Rachel Reeves's mind, that she decided not to do so. But, you know, people in government I've been speaking to say, well, actually, you know, if we can avoid breaking a manifesto promise, why would we not do so?
But, and in a way, that was her, I've heard one commentator describe it as her original sin, or the government's original sin, which was to box themselves in so early on, pre-election, with that commitment not to raise income tax, VAT or NI on workers. Because the research you mentioned there from More in Common, it's about the betrayal, not about the tax itself, isn't it?
I think that's fair. It's about Labour promise that they weren't going to do something. And Keir Starmer, we already know, has a little bit of a problem with people feeling like he shifts his position too easily. And you speak to pollsters about this a lot, that actually, obviously, remember when he was leader of the opposition, in fairness, he took it from a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour Party to a party of government in a very short space of time. But in order to do that, he did change the Labour Party's policies, most famously on things like, you know, tuition fees. That was going to be a thing that Jeremy Corbyn was going to magically write all of that money off. And Keir Starmer decided to change his mind on that. And that was never going to be something that he would bring into government.
And, so. and not to take away from the work that was done in Labour to make them a party of government. Yeah, but the context of that was an exhausted Conservative Party, Conservative government out of ideas, wasn't it? And out of trust, completely out of trust.
Yeah, so the question is, did they need to make that tax triple tax?
I would say
promise?
No.
Well, it's easy for us to say no now, isn't it?
Yes,
it's easy for us to say no, of course. And I think probably you're right. I think probably Labour would have still won the election. But I think for a lot of people, and they're having those conversations now, can I trust Labour with my money? Can I trust Labour not to raise my taxes? Because actually, Keir Starmer did promise repeatedly, I'm not going to raise taxes on working people before the election. And he made this big promise. And they have, in essence, broken that, at least for national insurance for businesses.
And arguably on thresholds, because people's tax will go up.
Yeah, so actually, you know, looking back, you can understand why ahead of the next election, some people, definitely people that maybe voted Tory and then switched over to the Labour Party, will go, I don't think I can trust Labour with my money. They promised not to do these tax rises, and then they did. So, of course, the tax triple lock-ish promise was designed to
confuse us with triple lock.
Sorry, okay. What should I call it? Sorry, what should you call
the
it?
Triple promise.
The original sin promise.
Okay,
sin promise was made, and you sort of, you know, I can see why.